What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 86 of Valuetown. I'm Chan MV, and joined, of course, with my partner in crime, Noxious. What's up, Noxious?
Not much, man. Coming back from a tournament casting in Toronto. Lots of meme festing going on there. That was actually really weird of a tournament. Maybe I'll touch on it later, but...
Meme fest? Stuff. Are you talking about Hearthstone? Or are you talking about?
Yeah, it was a Hearthstone tournament. It was a very meme-y event.
Okay, good stuff. And we've got two guests on today. We've got, man, sporting the awesome hair, Frodan, our favorite caster in Hearthstone, and as well as just everything Thanks. Organizer and analyst, whatever. Welcome to the show, man.
That's the first time I've ever been introduced as an analyst.
Well, you are an analyst. You're good enough now to be an analyst. Too, yeah. Okay. So I'll put it that way. I don't think you're giving enough.
Be I approve.
You're not giving enough credit sometimes with your knowledge. Anyways, also want to welcome Backspace to the show. We had you on like a long time ago, right?
Like, I think it was one of the first guests.
Yeah, you were my first guest when I did Pro Corner. I remember that, but I think I'm Valuetown too. Anyways, owner of Archon, manager, just all the stuff behind the scenes for Team Archon too. Welcome to the show, man.
Awesome. Hi.
All right, best possible way you could ever introduce yourself.
Yeah. All right, so there's obviously a very specific reason why we're having Backspace on this particular episode, and it's because he has a very large Archon announcement to, I guess, release to the community. There might have been some tidbits here and there on Amaza's stream that's been that you might have been hearing if you've been watching the stream, and, as well as the big announcement yesterday, which is Amaz is joining Team NRG.
Yeah.
So, obviously, there's some news in terms of Archon, and Backspace, I'll let you take it from here, at least just kind of giving us the lowdown, and we'll ask you some questions.
You kind of said it's going to be a little raw. I don't even know how to start this off. I guess it's kind of like after ATLC, a very large amount of our players were not in agreement with the production stuff, right? Like, so during the House Cup, it was like, everybody's room was turned into like a production facility, and you know, that's like really uncomfortable for the players, right? Obviously, there was some complaints and stuff. That's, I guess, when me and Amaz started the first conversations where we were just like, is the team worth it? Is the team not worth it? Kind of panned itself out over the next couple months where it's just like, we're spending X number of dollars on this team, getting almost no like publicity from it type of thing. And if you compare those dollars into just a big tournament, like, Amaz obviously gets way more feedback from a big tournament than he does, like, having the top five Hearthstone players on one team. That's kind of when we first started. And then, like, we explored a lot of options, like, what Archon could be. Archon Productions was something that we are probably still doing, I think. Amaz still really likes putting on his own productions. And, you know, we still pay for a team. Like, in the house right now, we still have three production people. The only competitive player that lives here is Delay, who is on Team Luminosity, right?
Yeah.
So moving forward with that, it was like, okay, that's totally cool. We don't have to like make a huge profit for this to be successful. In esports, I think anybody that lasts for 5 years is kind of solidified in it, right?
Yep.
I think Amaz is a streamer's already solidified, but like Amaz really likes having dual functions. Like as a streamer in his streamer life, he streams 5 hours a day and he's bored the rest of the time. Right. So he wants to have like an outside activity that like is somewhat productive. That's like his hobby that also either makes money or breaks it even. So I think that's kind of where Archon was in that state. You know, we did a lot of successful things in Archon, but a lot of failures in it too. But I don't know. Moving forward, I think Archon is like going to be kind of just called the Amaz company. That's just like a production company that does tournaments. Pretty much solely focused on like Hearthstone until Amaz like switches his interest into some other game. And I actually really think that was like the best business plan for us. So like, honestly, between the two of us, cause you know, obviously me and Amaz talk very often and so forth. I'm the one that wanted to make this move, right? Like more than Amaz did. It took him about 4 months to actually just be like, you know what? You're right. Right. Like, I remember like talking to him being like, you know, we have this amazing little kid, Amnesiac, on our team that we don't do anything with, right? Like, how have we not sent the production company out there to like kind of film him for a week? And like, how have we not like promoted him differently? Like, I don't care if he's a streamer on Twitch. I want this kid to be super popular because he's awesome, right? And like after having that conversation with the Mazur, he's just like, yeah, you're right. Like, you know, my day gets filled up with stuff. And like, sometimes I just kind of forget that Indonesia needs promotion in a different way. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's really easy for most teams. It's like, oh, we're going to sign you. Start streaming. We'll tweet about you. Right. Like, that's like typically what a team promotion is. But when you sign a 15-year-old and like, he doesn't have time to stream because he's school and stuff, like you have to take that responsibility a lot different. And the responsibilities there is like, okay, let's get him on ESPN, right? Let's get him interviewed. Let's get him like active in like small ways to take up a short amount of his time, but gives him like a career at the end of school if he wants one. Or something awesome to put on his college application.
Right.
Right. And sure. after that was literally the key moment that I saw everything switch from Amaz, where he was just like, you're right. This is like a moment that like Amnesiac's awesome and Amaz loves Amnesiac. And he's like, we're not doing enough for him. So therefore, we're not going to do that. And the only thing I could offer him is like, hey, we're going to run this tournament. I'll put you in it. That was like the key moment when we decided. And I think everyone kind of noticed it like 4 or 5 months ago. Mm-hmm. It mainly started when Firebat left. And then we released like Nadia, Zalay, so on and so forth.
Sure.
And then after that, it was like a transition of like, do we make an announcement that Team Archon's going away and it's becoming a production company or what? Then I guess about a month ago, we started talking to Andy, the owner of NRG, who's amazing. He and Amaz actually share a lot of the same ideas of what esports is and like how to move forward in it. And they really kind of hit it off. Andy is like almost a daily interaction in Amaz's life now. And it was really hard for Amaz to just like say, hey, I'm joining Team NRG because in his mind, he's losing something amazing, right? Like, he was really emotional. Like, and not a lot of people could probably tell from that stream, but like, I mean, I was like watching just like, oh, poor Amaz. Oh, he's in so much pain. Yeah, you know? And then obviously there's like Raynad spams like all over the place, like Raynad 1, stuff like that. I mean, it's just obvious stuff.
Oh my God. Happen. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah, just a lot of stuff that's going to happen.
Totally won. You're on the Temple Storm channel right now talking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, all that stuff is always going to happen and like, but like, you know, when you're in an emotional state, that stuff hurts even more, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, just like watching Amaz go through all that, like, kind of proud of him for continuing, right? Mm-hmm. He'd stream today, didn't let anything affect him, which is cool. But yeah, moving forward, NRG really seems like they have the same ideas that we had, mm-hmm. right? So one of the reasons why Amaz started the team was kind of like, he's like, hey, I'm Amaz. I'm going to do these things. And the teams are just like, we can't help facilitate you do that. Right? Like, right. I mean, no teams 3 years ago or 2.5 years ago or whatever had, like, a production company. No teams had, like, you know, like, well, if Amaz was like...
He was on Team Liquid, right? Team Liquid didn't have a production team? No way, right?
I don't think 2 years ago, not to run a tournament. I mean, they do now. Damien is on there. He did our house tour. He's amazing. If you're watching this and you need a production guy, get Damien. He's amazing. But 2 years ago, if Amaz was like, I want to run a tournament that has a different set of rule sets, it's going to cost this much. Can you help me find sponsors? Like, when you're on a team, like, that's not, you're not just like, oh, okay, let me help you with that, right? Like, and that was kind of the situation Amaz was in. Not any knocks on Liquid, because Liquid's like by far one of the best orgs. It's just, you know, they didn't have everything in place to help Amaz back then. So Amaz's first goal with starting the team was actually just like to kind of fulfill his, like what he wanted to do in the space.
Right.
And the reason why he started it, because I mean, Amaz had offers from every team, right? Obviously, like every team sure. offered him something at some point in time. But like, he just thought it was better if he like was in control of his own career and all that type of stuff. Right. After talking to Andy, this is the first time I've ever seen Amaz excited, like about joining a team.
Okay. That's pretty
great. Right. Like, Andy was just like, yeah, we're setting up this entire infrastructure and you could use it, right? Like, that's like exactly what I was supposed to hear, right? So him switching out of like Archon and using Andy's stuff was a really easy transition. Yeah. Maybe not so much on Twitch, maybe not so much on Reddit, but this, like, we never argued about this once. I mean, he was just like, yeah, this is going to be cool. Like, he was super excited.
Yeah, I get. I mean, there's no question that Amaz just himself and his brand is so big and successful enough that, you know, he's gonna fall fine. he's not going to fall. He's gonna change directions, yeah, and it's going to be absolutely fine. I'm very, very confident in that. I guess what we'd like to ask you some, you know, just a little bit more about is just really the whole team, just Hearthstone team. And, you know, we've seen some teams in the past, like Hearthlytics recently. You know, we had RG on here, and he, you know, he was talking a little bit post-mortem of about Hearthlytics, and even to yesterday or earlier today, we heard that Navi is discontinuing their Hearthstone team now too. So wanted to ask you just the challenges, because or first off, if the team was making money and you know you guys you know were having you know very healthy revenue and maybe even having some success in another game too, because you guys did have a Dota team at one point.
Yeah, we had a Dota team. It was really cool.
Do you see yourself? Would this have eventually ended regardless because of maybe a mismatch there, or do you think this it would have changed if it was?
I can kind of fill you in on that. We were profitable for about a year and a half, and then the last like 4 or 5 months we were definitely not profitable.
When you say profitable, do you mean like $100 profitable, or do you mean like
no,
like way over?
So like on the Hearthstone team we were making money, but like and even on tournaments. Mm-hmm. Like, we were barely making money, but we were making money. But, like, okay. That's the thing is, like, Amazo's time is worth way more than that profit, right? And my time is worth more than that profit, too. So, like, moving forward, just having a solely Amaz-based, like, business is just way more profitable, right? Like, the I'll give you a really good comparison. Over the course of a year, I think we sold in between 2,100 and 2,500 Archon t-shirts,
right?
Over the course of 3 months, we sold, I think, 1,400 Amaz t-shirts, right? Like, I mean, it's just, like, not even close between which brand was worth more.
Yeah. So I guess my question was more towards, is this literally have to do with just what's most efficient in terms of making money? Okay.
Income,
okay. I mean, like, the, like, future career stuff, like, with me and Amaz is kind of like, we want to, like, build up Amaz's brand, figure that out, and then maybe approach some other streamers that we like and just be like, hey, if you join up with us, Amaz will teach you what we did with Amaz, right? And just like kind of build up our own little small network. And I, when I mean small, I mean it might be limited to 5 people total over the career of that like company, right?
Sure.
They're like extremely specialized, that type of stuff. That's something that Amaz and I have talked about a lot, because Amaz really likes Cryotic and like they're really close. And Craig kind of needs, he doesn't really need any of it, but, you know, he appreciates that type of stuff. And Amaz, you know, he really likes a lot of the other big streamers. I think I've monetized Amaz better than anybody could have.
Yeah.
But also with that, I don't think I could do 3 people right now, right? Like just the Amaz, like, it's so much work. Like, I have a full-time job and it's just Amaz, right? So it's like...
Yeah, so that was obviously a rumor that was going around too, just for months now, that you guys were transitioning from a competitive team to more of a streamer agency type of thing. Is that? I mean, that's pretty much what we're talking about, right? You're talking about
No. So this would be much different. It'd be more like not so much an agency as opposed to like something that builds up a brand, like an agent. So like the agencies I know of in this space probably bring in like $3 million in revenue, have 7 employees, and everyone makes $45,000 to $50,000 a year.
Yeah,
right. So like that's not
a big agency,
right? Okay, right. So like, these are like the huge agencies in the space that are like booking deals, right? I would pass on those jobs. Like, that's not really something I'm interested in, right? I mean, I do a little bit of that for Amaz, but for the most part, we signed a deal. The contract signed for a year. I don't have to worry about it afterwards, right? So that job's like 3 to 6 weeks out of my life. Every year, something like that. If you were to tell me to do that for like the span of 10 people, I would just pass. That's really not worth too much.
Okay,
I guess. I mean, making $50,000 a year is cool, you know. But I think I could do a little bit better. Man, this is so raw.
It's okay. I mean, it's the most important thing. It's just like, you know, I guess getting your thoughts out there and just finding out exactly what I guess the thought processes went with just coming to this decision, because you know Archon's a big part of the community. You know, this is literally was one of the first teams that originated in Hearthstone, you know, not to mention it is like one of the biggest
the teams second team that so. Started and
yeah
it I think both the top two teams really kind of both the top two teams really started Hearthstone. like on Twitch, like really did. Sure. Right? Yeah. And then over the course of this last year, both teams lost interest, right? Like I think Tempo Storm kind of like was like, hey, not I'm not trying to knock anything at all, right? Like at all. But I do feel like Tempo Storm and Archon kind of like slowed down on the production a little bit. They're all still streaming, they're all still doing stuff, but I think Tempo Storm made things really special very often, right? And I think Archon made things really special very often. I think those moments became kind of more and more distant, right? That's kind of the way that I want to phrase it.
Less and less of those.
There's less of these special things, yeah, special events and right. whatnot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, and that was just going to happen, right? Like, when Amaz and Reyna take over, like, ownership roles, your time just goes away. And you do just, you know, start spending less time on the things you're passionate about. Or maybe your passion switches to being the business owner, right. you know?
Mm-hmm. Especially when you're picking up other teams, and of course it's going to be more time away from Hearthstone and
more teams, more employees, more stress, mm-hmm. right? Like, I mean, there's just, but yeah, that was definitely not a knock on Tempo Storm or anything. Didn't mean it if it came out that way.
Yeah, no, it was. It was.
I think I could be like, I like everything about Tempo Storm. People would be like, fuck you, Backspace. You don't know anything about Tempo Storm. And I'd be like, oh, okay, cool.
All right, so one big question I'm sure a lot of people are wondering just with this announcement is ATLC. So are these going to continue? I mean, this is an event that a lot of us in the community thought was one of the best events that was held in the Hearthstone community to date. And I think Noxious, you were saying it's probably the most successful one outside of BlizzCon, or just the Blizzard championships, so. Right?
But it's also because of the scale of it, right? Like mm-hmm. we've never had anything else like on the same level. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of really creative stuff coming out, like the Challenge Stone, the sealed format. Like we've had a lot of really cool stuff. But as far as the length of the event and the amount of hype that went behind it, mm-hmm. it actually tried to make teams matter a lot, which was cool because we hadn't seen enough of that. I feel at that point, Hearthstone. So after that, it became, people started outdoing themselves as far as the creativity of what they would do with events. And that was really cool to see. But I don't think there's ever been anything as big not coming from BlizzCon, let's say.
Right. Yeah. So what's the future of ATLC? Are we going to see, some of these events?
I kind of want to talk about Noxious's point. After ATLC, right? ATLC kind of also helped ruin our team. It was really funny. Sure. We ran this event, right? And it was so successful that every single team picked up a team afterwards, right? Like every single team. Like Liquid went up to 3 or 4 players. Navi picked up a brand new team. Mm-hmm. Everyone was getting hyped up over like, season 2 of ATLC. And then we were like, yeah, we're not running that right now. But then afterwards, my own players were like, hey, all these guys are getting picked up for more money. Can we have more money? We're like, no.
Like, oh my god,
so
getting sniped too. Yeah,
I mean, I think ATLC was so ATLC was so big in the community that actually made the community stronger. But moving forward, one of the things that me and Amaz argued a lot about was running ATLC 2 or whatever. I always tell him, like, let's do it cheap or whatever, and Amaz wants to do it big. And that's like definitely the thing that he and I argue the most about. Yes, we're going to do another one. I don't know how to say that without spoiling things, I guess.
yeah, just historically, it's like leaks and stuff. We want to be as careful as possible.
Another one has been in the works for about 6 months, right? This one's going to be much different than the other ones. Right. We've talked to Blizzard about it multiple times. We've had conversations with like some of the bigger sponsors about it, too. It kind of gets to the point where Amaz actually told me that if we're going to make an announcement, that he's going to make an announcement about how he wants to do ATLC. Timelines aren't set yet, but yeah, it's definitely happening.
All right, good news.
If I quit right now and I was there to help facilitate ATLC, it would still 100% happen. Like, Amaz wants to do it, and if Amaz wants to do something, he just does it. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's good news.
Yeah, it's definitely great news. I think a lot of people will be happy that continues. A question about just, I guess, general, what your thoughts are on owning a Hearthstone team. So we've talked a little bit about, just aspects of it so far already. But just question straight at you. Is it viable owning a Hearthstone team right now?
No. There's no way.
There's actually no way, or is it just very difficult?
So like, if you did the exact tempo storm structure or the channel fireball structure, or the Star City game structure,
which is sure explaining. Yeah,
it's just you get like some competitive players to make videos and you promote a product, right? Like you sell something. The thing is, like the Magic like version of that, Channel Fireball and Star City Games, which I assume is what Tempo Storm is a little bit based off of. Like they sell Magic cards and they make profit off of that because you have a bunch of pros telling people to play these cards, right? It's not a product that Hearthstone players get to sell. You're either selling your stream or you're selling a t-shirt, right? No, I don't really see it being too profitable right now.
I see.
Like Hearthstone in general. For the bigger teams, like, you know, Cloud9, TSM, blah, 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 they're forced to have a Hearthstone team because they're forced to have a team of everything, right? So for them, having like a promotional platform in a different game is obviously awesome. It has nothing to do with making profit on them now. It's something to do with attaching someone to their brand name, and 3 years later, they'll watch the different game that their player is playing. So if you have a small team and you want to build a profit off, no, I don't see that happening. If you have a big team and you already have like 3 other teams, yeah, jump into Hearthstone. It's a good game, right?
Okay.
Pretty true.
You agree with that completely, Dan? Just...
Yeah, like 95% of it, I think. In the traditional sense, monetization in Hearthstone is really difficult to achieve, primarily because Torment EV is extremely low for most players. Therefore, the only way you can reliably monetize anything is through streaming, primarily because streaming is the best way to build a brand, and you can sell anything off of streaming. Crypt sells socks, for crying out loud. So you can do anything. Yes, I mean, I got offered the same thing. Like, you want to make Frodan socks? I'm like, I don't really want to get into that weird fetishes. But I think the interesting thing about owning a Hearthstone team is that there is monetization available. It's just that it's extremely difficult to do so. And it's almost not worth it because it's a very, very, very long run business model, which you're going to have to suffer huge losses for the first few years, and no one can really suffer that because we're working with pennies compared to other teams. This is why Raynett got really pissed at listening to LCS owners whine, because he's like, at least you guys got money to do stuff. Like, we had to pinch our own pockets, maybe sell part of the team's ownership, maybe have to get investor or either get extremely lucky with the product in order to have this capital, which is the limiting factor to do anything. I'm like 90% sure that if Backspace and Amaz had $1.5 million to drop stuff and be willing to tank that much willingly, they'd be much more successful in what they're trying to achieve. And it applies to anybody. Capital is one of the biggest limiting factors. And that's why VC teams that move in with like big money from mainstream sports or media, entertainment, etc., they can do these things and they can take the loss because they see that in 5 years, their teams will be worth 10 times more and they could sell off of it or advertise off of it or even just sell it completely as a product.
Nailed that one.
Yeah. But I think it's exactly like this in like a lot of spheres, even beyond esports. Like, it's just truer. I think for Hearthstone, like in the esports scene, just because it was so, I don't want to say unexpected, but its growth kind of caught a lot of the people who were, you know, pursuing competitive titles by surprise. So I think a lot of it came down that, you know, you had to build it from the ground up, hence Temple Storm and Archon mattering so much. Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously very important to have alternate forms of revenue too, and you know, selling product is obviously one of the big things that, like Backspace, you were referring to. Tempo Storm obviously has a website that's fairly very successful too. That, you know, is
Great website.
Yeah, we're a community website where a lot of people go and, you know, put their decks and whatnot. So and that's really important to you know, obviously generating any kind of revenue. Because, like you said, like Frodan was saying, the players just don't generate enough revenue unless they're one of the biggest streamers in the community. So, given that, like, how do you have an ATLC? Given that, and like, are we seeing near the end of I guess, you know, more of these organic teams, Hearthstone teams? We still see Luminosity like picking up players, picking up actually highly skilled players. You know, we still see the G2 team, obviously, you know, doing their thing too. Like, taking that approach of, again, picking up more skilled players or higher ranked players that don't necessarily stream or are as big as streamers as you know, we've seen in the past. What's in the future for these guys? Axis, what do you think?
Tough question. I don't know. I mean, I've talked to Steve from Luminosity multiple times. He's
yeah.
Great team owner. Don't know why he's jumping into Hearthstone. His team looks really good. Right? He has like Jockey, Frozen, and Zalae. Is that correct? Is there anybody else I'm missing?
Yeah, these are all
Phone Tap.
All these players are insane.
Muzzy didn't get, yeah.
Like I said before, it's probably just like get their name into Hearthstone, attach you to their brand 3 years later. Hopefully something happens.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's because the way you sell. I mean, this is something that a lot of teams do. I don't want to say like who does it because it doesn't apply to everybody. But Hearthstone is one of the most watched games on Twitch. And what you can do is use Hearthstone's numbers as a whole and sell against it. You can say these many millions of people tune in to watch Twitch per month. These many people consume Hearthstone content. We have the top-ranked Hearthstone players. This is how many people watch the Hearthstone Championship Tour. Logically, this is what the kind of advertising exposure you can get. What they're not selling is when guys like Chalky, Muzzy, Bonetap, Frozen, they're fantastic players. I actually watch their streams a lot, but not many people do. So then when sponsors go in, they see that it's not actually all rainbows and roses. The fact that the scene's propped up by 20 people's minutes, not the top 200 players. So that's where the bubble bursts. There's actually a very tangible bubble in Hearthstone, and it's primarily because of how rich the 1% is. Not rich in terms of wealth, even though they are much more wealthy, but more rich in terms of the power, influence, the viewership that they get, and their presence compared to the 99%. It's extremely sharp, and it's almost non-existent in any other game, maybe except Overwatch. I think Seagull is probably like the only person in the top 1% there. Mm-hmm. But like, it's that kind of stark contrast between like the difference between tier one and tier two in terms of a brand's presence in or personality is such a sharp drop off that investment in Hearthstone is extremely difficult for any outsider. Therefore, you have to sell against the scene's numbers in order to be able to enter into it. So that's where I'm assuming Luminosity is placing their bets. I think they're also kind of placing a bets based on the fact that Hearthstone's exposure towards the end of the year is actually really high because of things like the Hearthstone World Championship.
Short-term.
Luminosity's guaranteed like three spots or something, or two or three spots in the last call. So they have a pretty good chance to go to BlizzCon. And if they win the championship and then they do well at DreamHack, I mean, that's pretty good for them for a short-term contract if that's what they want to do.
Right.
And that might actually be something that happens very often. Maybe Na'Vi sees that no one from Na'Vi can go to the Hearthstone World Championship. So they're like, yeah, maybe we just don't do it this time and then we come back later. You might actually see this be a recurring thing. Unless
it's almost just like slapping a patch on somebody. Like somebody in poker, a World Series of Poker, just slap a patch on them while they're doing well type of thing.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because it's so hard to find sure bets in this scene. It's really difficult.
Yeah, I guess with given that, I mean, you're basically saying that a lot of these individuals, and it's something that I've been thinking for a long time too, is just that the streamer brands are just much bigger in the eyes of the community too. Like I don't actually Archon and Tempest Storm were probably the only two team brands that had any kind of impact on the community. But the big brands are the Amazes and the Crips, and the Reyna.
If you took 10,000 random people that played Hearthstone that watched Twitch, just put them in a poll and you asked them who the best players in the world were, it would go in order of Crip, right?
Yeah,
then Amaz, Reyna, Trump, right? Amaz, like, those are the best players in the world right now, right? So, I've even had this conversation with Amaz where he's somebody randomly emails him and he's like, hey, we want you to put together, a video series where you explain a deck in great detail and we'll give you X number of dollars in a month. No, dude, I'm not good at this game anymore. I'm like, no, you are. Like, everyone thinks you're the best, right?
Numbers, surely you are. It's one of those, it's kind of a disconnect too between, again, the whole advertisement world and the player world. Like, they're very different. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, makes sense.
All right, so what's the future plans for you, Backspace?
Oh, Jesus. I'm going to get through this month. I have to move all of this to Maz's new place in Canada.
Oh, the house is closed now, right? Like, you guys...
Two of the production guys are moving with us because, Maz still needs them. I mean, just for day-to-day stuff, even just YouTube videos and stuff. Mm. I'm going to go down there for a little bit, I think. I'm not too sure how long. But yeah, I have no clue. I'm going to get through this month and figure it out, I guess.
Just like every other team manager in the business. They don't know what's going to happen next month. It's true. Yeah. Me included, man. Honestly, the real truth behind teams in this space is that no one really knows what they're doing. They're just pivoting strategies every few months because how fast the scene changes. No one really knows. You can make year-long plans. You can make five-year plans, but those are going to go out the window. And just like,
yeah, I mean, like last year, one of the reasons why there's so much content was that we had like four really big sponsors just battling each other, right? Mm-hmm. Just throwing money at you, trying to get you on tournaments and stuff, right? So like, and that kind of died down this year, like a little bit. I mean, there's still sponsors out there. They just want, you know, less money involved, and I mean, it happens. So
How much of it is just because just there hasn't been many events to even show? I know the viewership has been down. Is this stem a lot from that? Maybe just the viewership for Hearthstone is
lower than it used to be? I don't want to sound cocky at all, but I do think the two big companies that did, or actually there's three, because I really like Seed Story Cup, but like Tempest Storm, Archon, and Seed Story Cup, Tempest Storm and Archon just kind of lost a little bit of interest in running tournaments. We were the people kind of telling people how to run tournaments, right? Like, I mean, we ran a tag team tournament, right? I still, to this day, think it's the best tournament we've ever run. No casters, just two players versus two players, and they commentated to each other, and like they just talked about their plays. And then on the other stream was the other team, right? Blizzard based a tournament off of this like 4 or 5 months later with no credit to us, right? Like they did their collegiate event where it's like 3v3 or whatever. Like, I mean, without Tempest Storm and Archon like telling people like, hey, this is what's fun to do in Hearthstone, Hearthstone's content just kind of dropped. Like the basic average tournament where there's like, and we have 16 players and they're playing for $8,000 and he made it all the way up through the ranks. Like, this is boring now. Like,
solid Frodan impression.
I don't know if that was like a hybrid between Frodan and Admirable.
Yeah, it was Admirable. It was more Admirable.
It was a hybrid? Wow, okay.
Way more Admirable.
I can see the memes coming now. Hybrid of.
But yeah, you know, like, Frodan. That, it gets boring. Like, I don't even watch them all the time anymore.
Yeah, I mean.
But I mean, I legit watched every single Tempest Storm tournament. I mean, I never missed one. Like, and I watched every single one of my own tournaments, and I thought they were good. So, and Seed Story Cup is amazing. I love Take, and all of his stuff is really good. So,
yeah, and to be fair, like, I don't think Take's tournament gets the views it should get, too. Like, I think that really deserves probably double what he gets.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
G35 was insane.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I wish
crazy.
I'd been there.
Yeah.
Good Lord. that was, like, so the one fun. Time I couldn't go. Like, oh, God.
The dude in the mask. The dude in the mask just did it for me, man. the guy that was, you know, I forgot. What was his name? The guy that was...
Horus?
Horus, that's what it was. Oh, yeah, God, that was...
You don't fuck with Egyptian divinities. You just don't.
I can't make the next Seed Story Cup. I already started talking to them about the next one because I help them plan a lot.
You know, okay.
I help the Take TV guys plan a lot of the event every time, and it's kind of sad because I've been there since the beginning, but I can't go next.
No.
My sister's getting married, so I can't.
Disaster.
I only have one sibling, so I have.
Okay,
I guess that's acceptable. Family is always first, right? Okay, well, from a standpoint of, like, one last question. From a standpoint of sponsors, they're still there though for these Hearthstone events. Is it really just a matter of people doing them?
Yeah, or? They are. Mm-hmm. I think right now the sense is that some things are pulling out, which is just kind of natural life cycle of just any ecosystem. I'm not going to pretend like everything is unicorns and farting rainbows right now, but I think it's just very natural for people to try to get into the scene and then they just don't see it work out and then they pull out. So they see Navi, they see all these other things, and they're going to assume that everything is going badly. And it's also kind of confirmed by the fact that people aren't really happy about the current state of Hearthstone, so which we'll talk about a lot later. Mm-hmm. But I think right now there are a lot of sponsors that still want to get involved let me ask you something. Do you guys, and I say this all the time, to like Blizzard to a lot of organizers. Do you understand how sick Hearthstone has a, like to be as a potential as an esport? Can you?
Yeah, I can. I completely understand it.
Can you tap into it? Okay, let me ask you.
Of course.
What name a single esport that can be competed at the highest level of professional play, and you can be eating without skipping a beat?
Oh my God!
Name another one.
Come on!
So you're telling me that there's no possible ways, or you can be drinking a beverage, and I know this sounds really stupid, but think about it. If you're really trying to think about the capabilities and potential of Hearthstone, is if we can actually achieve a very good, sustainable professional ecosystem of good tournament play, good you know, very good viewership, etc. There's so much room for sponsor growth that it just blows my mind. But people really don't think about this because they think, wow, how do I sell a keyboard to an iPad user who just never plays games with their keyboard? These are the things that we really think about. And then when I pitch these things, people are like,
oh my God.
Oh my God, you're a genius.
Fred is like spot on right now.
No, it's absolutely
right. It's really not that hard. Like,
yeah. Well, let's talk about how many esports you can actually play just on mobile. You know, like
right, like just baseline. Yeah. There's like what Clash Royale, which is
I like Clash a lot, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but
Clash requires both your hands to a certain degree. Yeah. Hearthstone, you literally could be snacking the entire time, and you're not even selling out because you just happen to be hungry, and you're still playing at a really high level. Like, actually, food kind of helps you process stuff because chewing kind of gets blood through your head.
Well, I mean, business talk. It's stupid, man. The demographic for Hearthstone is actually wider than any of the other esports too. So, even more product potential in terms of selling, you know, and advertisers or whatnot. So yeah, absolutely. Just as the sport itself, for sure, we haven't even come close to. I mean, it's not even the tip of the iceberg. I still think there's like a ton of things you can do in Hearthstone. And then on top of that, just the potential for revenue from advertisers is, again, like I think we barely even touched it. When I like talk about some of these agents or whatnot and like some of the companies that they're working with, I mean, we're still talking about like these tiny companies that are trying to advertise like on all these streams. You know, and Frodan, I'm sure you've been, and both Noxious, you guys have been approached, and Backspace, probably the team's been approached by all these different types of orgs, and none of them are huge yet, you know, and the viewership that Hearthstone gets definitely warrants like sponsorships from large companies. Sure. They just don't know about Hearthstone. That's the problem.
I mean,
now. And
kind of this is probably a bad topic. Team owners are not just team owners, right? Like, consultants kind of teach people about the space, right? Like, so when you go pitch to a big company, some of the team owners probably don't understand, like if you just go to a company and you're like, yeah, we'll give you ad rotations. Okay, well, they have a million different ways that ad rotations are strictly better in radio and TV, right? I mean, they just are. You have more of them. It's cheaper. Facebook is like pennies on the dollar. YouTube is pennies on the dollar. Like, so if you don't go pitch why a company should actually be a part of your stream, your brand, they're just not going to join, right? I think Amaz right now might have like one or two sponsors, something like that. We're in contracts with every single one of our old sponsors, switching it from the team thing to the Amaz thing.
Yeah.
Right? So we're transferring all of our contracts from like Team Archon to Amaz. It's taking some time. I mean, it takes a little bit of time. But I mean, last month or 2 months ago, we had 11 sponsors. Something like that.
Wow. Okay. That's good.
Right. Like, we're one of the most sponsored. Amaz is like literally one of the most sponsored streamers on Twitch. So I think some of the team owners don't really understand how to pitch sponsors, or they set their values way too high. Yeah. Like, way, way, way too high. Like, if, like, last year is like much different. Like, some of the sponsors that immediately came in and just offered you a huge chunk of money.
Sure.
I think this year it's kind of died down a little bit. Yeah. So, in comparison to like what we made from one sponsor last year, we had 3 sponsors to make that up. Right.
Yeah.
And we're still making about the exact same money on the Amaz stream and all that type of stuff. But yeah, as far as like the bigger companies coming in, none of these big companies have somebody that's like fucking join esports. Like they might know what it is, but there's not like a big consulting company out there other than pretty much Twitch that's pitching to these big companies.
It doesn't even necessarily have to be like long term esports. Even just like a single event, like Frodan, you know, you're mentioning eating, right? Tostitos, right? They did that big Twitch thing, bowl thing. Like, couldn't we do an eating contest? We could do an eating contest or something with Hearthstone.
I mean,
you can.
I mean, this. to kind of wrap up this topic, because I feel like we're getting a little bit off track here, is that there is money to be made in Hearthstone. People know a lot. Some people know how to. Some people really want to, but it's really difficult because Hearthstone's still extremely young. There's not an established system that works right now. Every year, HCT is extremely different because Blizzard's trying to figure out what works for them. Not only that, but third-party tournament organizers are still in the process of fleshing things out. I think in about 2-3 years, DreamHack's Grand Prix system will probably be a lot better than it is even right now. And I think DreamHack is probably the best thing that we have in terms of open tournaments.
Yeah, it's also awesome.
Geico is pretty good too, but they also need time to flesh out. Maybe they don't even want to do it next year because it's so hard to get ROI with open players and whatnot. It's really tricky, but I think in time, the people that stick through it through the worst times, which is right now, the maturation process where we go through puberty as a scene, is going to be the hardest. But once we get past it, it's going to be awesome. I keep saying that in the year 2020, Hearthstone's going to be freaking sweet. But until then, it's going to get a little bit worse before it gets better, in my opinion.
Fernan knows his shit.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Backspace. Well, I'm going to let you go because I know you're going to make in the rounds here. I know just kind of with the announcement and all, but I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Hopefully I flushed out some of the rambling in this one.
Oh, absolutely.
Go do some better ones later. All right. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Good luck in everything you do, man.
See you, man. Appreciate it.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back with three of us going on and talking about the current state of Hearthstone. All right, guys, we are back. Thanks for sticking around. And I'm going to continue the show by talking about the current state of Hearthstone, which has been a very big topic.
Yep.
Wait, hold on a second. Hold on. Give me 1 second. Hold on. Yeah, you guys are still. All right, there we go. Now you guys, they can hear you. All right, so current state of Hearthstone, big topic in the community. You know, I've had lots of people talk about it on their streams, on YouTube videos, on Twitter, and including all of us too. But I figured Froden probably hasn't gone all in because I know Dan keeps a lot of like his full thoughts, restrained. Yeah, exactly.
You can't. You just can't.
Because if I go all in, that's the rest of the show. You guys are not talking. If anybody,
it's fine. I don't mind if I don't talk.
I tend to just go on and on.
Hey, man.
And then one person in chat just says one thing that triggers me again, and I go all
over. You're back at
that's
it.
That's Froden's stream, man. If you ever watch
Froden's stream, right back in it, dude.
It's good stuff,
you
man.
Think the last load is done.
All right, so let's talk about it. God, how do I approach this? So first things first, let's talk about, I guess, just the current state of RNG in the game, because I think a lot of the sentiments lately have stemmed from just how RNG is being used right now, in terms of design. And I figure let's talk about both good and bad RNG in Hearthstone, and then we'll talk about just like where we're at right now in terms of just the design. So for you guys, how do you guys just generally feel about RNG in this game? In a card game like this game, yeah.
So randomness, unfortunately, is why we play card games. That's I mean, everyone can already accept that there is good RNG. People who don't like RNG and they can't accept any form of RNG, card games aren't for you. Just that's already a given.
Yep.
There's lots of good RNG in Hearthstone, and we don't really acknowledge it because we don't really think twice about it. But I mean, there are some ones that we do acknowledge, like Discover, for example. Discover is very good.
Mm-hmm.
Bad RNG has been usually pinned on things that we can't necessarily interact with or control. One of the targets, of course, being Yogg-Saron and Barnes. I think these are two cards that people really don't like because of how swingy and the high variance that they are. And I think what ends up coming down to the point is people just want to have card games which they feel rewarded. It's not necessarily like what is good and bad RNG, because it's always debatable. You can debate across anything. You could always say like, these things take a lot of skill to play, or it doesn't. Or you can play around it, or you can't. There's a whole list of like ways you can define interaction and all these different things and semantics. I think what people really care about is whether or not they feel satisfied. Because Hearthstone, at its core, is not just a card game; it's a strategy game. And if you can feel rewarded, or you can feel like you outplayed your opponent enough so that you can feel justified in taking the victory, that's good. The bad, when it starts getting really bad in RNG, in my book, is when the winners don't feel satisfied. They feel like this is not the way I want to win. This is not the way that it was very fun. Maybe some people care about winning to the point where they don't care how they win. But for the vast majority of players, they're in the winner interview at HCT and they're saying like, that sucked for both of us.
Or I shouldn't really hate have won.
The way that went down.
Yeah, or I shouldn't have won. That's the worst words you want to come from a winner.
It's because it sabotages their, it undermines their entire effort. You know, they played 20 minutes or an hour's worth of exhausting strategy, and then all of a sudden they had to just rely on something that was extremely variance driven, and it undermines their accomplishment too. So they feel not satisfied. And of course, the losing player is salty as hell because they lost and they felt like something was unjustified. So this is what is, quote, the bad RNG in my book. And I can definitely echo that sentiment. So that's currently what people are thinking.
Right.
If I summarize it correctly.
Noxious, what do you think? Good and bad RNG. Definitions.
Examples? It's kind of broad. I mean, I don't know. There's always been talk about bad RNG since... I mean, there was talk of it back in the early beta with the Shaman, Hero Power, and Lightning Storm. So it's not anything new. And you can't really interact with whether or not Lightning Storm is going to do its thing when you're literally on a 25% to maybe roll and then another 50 to maybe roll. It's like you almost can't rely on those to win. Mm-hmm. So the discussion's always been there. I just think right now the issue is just how many dice, I guess, are rolled during a single game, like in which classes do it? Because it used to be that RNG was, you know, this Ragnaros steal, the Sylvanas steal. There's like which secret did the Hunter play? So that's not really RNG in and of itself, but it's one of those things where you have to make a guess and just go for it sometimes. So there has been variance in the past. It's never felt as though every single match you play contains it. Like every single match you play, I don't know if a deck. Really, there aren't that many. Like, I guess, like the warrior decks, the cycle for the OTK. I can't think of a deck right now that has literally zero rolls. Like, even Murloc Paladin's running this cover with the Ivory Knight. So
yeah. I mean, like, the volume of RNG is definitely something we're going to be touching.
I think that's
for sure.
It's mostly the problem is the threshold more so than the kind. Well, like, I think so.
I'd say yes.
So the counter to this. I'm sorry to interrupt, Chan, man.
Go ahead.
Actually a very popular sentiment, and it's completely justified in terms of feeling. But the opposite spectrum is when we have things that are extremely consistent. And we had a meta like that where it was Druid, Patron, Warrior, and the Handlock. Yeah. And the reason why is because they drew 25 out of 30 cards in their deck on average per game. And they ended the game the same exact way. The consistency was mind-blowing. And to the point where every game felt the same. And that's actually the point where it got extremely boring. It wasn't like Hearthstone was actually, in the sense, the better player usually tend to win because of Patron and Handlock being very skill intensive decks. Druid not as much, but still relevant enough. And it got to the point where like it just wasn't very fun anymore. Like sure, the better player was winning, but then how do we balance the entertainment factor both as a playing and as a person that's watching? So this is the two extreme sides of the spectrum, right? You have one that's extremely dry, boring, but you know very consistent, and then you have the one that's like really wacky, swingy, but not reliable at all. And all of a sudden, we're like, you know, it feels like we have to choose one or the other, but it's not true. We can find a middle ground.
A middle ground, which is probably what people want.
Yeah, for me, the bad RNG has a lot to do with the power level of it, too. Because I think bad RNG is one that swings the game to the point, or can swing the game from... Like, if we're going to quantify, it's just at least something, like the extent of swinging a game. When you can swing a game that would take, like, multiple turns to, like, get out of, or maybe even, like, potentially three or four turns at times when you see Yogg-Saron swinging a game, I think that's when it starts becoming, like, oh, my God, that's, like, that was literally almost like coin flip to win a, you know, like a miracle coin flip to win a game type of feel. And RNG that maybe cost you a turn, I feel like is more palatable. In terms of a lot of the players, even the pro players, you know, like people, of course, still complain about the knife jugglers and things like that. But, you know, the flame juggler, you know, that's a pretty strong card, too. But, you know, they don't complain quite as much about those cards because it's like a half to a turn type of penalty if the right thing
they will.
Happens, you know. Yeah,
there's variance that affects all kinds of things. And
sure,
I think the bottom line is that what the players are asking for. And this is when I say the players, I mean the players at the top level.
At the top level, yes.
The players at the top level are... I'm not saying the entire player base. The top level players are asking just for a little bit more edge. because that little bit more edge goes a long way. Firebat did some run number statistics, and I usually trust them because Firebat actually does diligent mathematics.
Yeah, he does.
So, you know, like some people just kind of estimate based off of their feelings, but he tries to do it. Like, I mean, he's not always right, but you know, he tries. And he says, like, even if you improve consistency of the top player's win percentage or the favored player's win percentage by, like, 1 or 2%, then, it, like, over a course of, like, a 7-round Swiss, their chances of advancing the top 8 jump dramatically, like, 3 or 4 or 5-fold. And that's, like, a huge boost. And if you think about it, the current win margins of someone in StarCraft, and I know people are going to cherry pick, but generally the average StarCraft player, you know, 60-65% win rate. And if a Hearthstone player is just like, you know, 57-58, it's not that different, but it is a big difference. Like 7-8% is a huge difference. But if you just bump it up a little bit, it just starts showing a lot more consistency. We're not asking for the same person to win every single Hearthstone tournament. We just want to be able to see narrative and storylines at tournaments that we can feel attached to. Otherwise, we're just constantly in a group of strangers who we don't feel any attachment towards. And the people who there are only the people who end up sticking around are people who just like to see explosions and numbers go up and down. That's yeah. That's kind of what ends up happening if you just take away the narrative of tournaments.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And there's nothing we don't, you know, having one person win every single tournament is definitely bad, but we need to see repeat winners like in this community. Like it's so hard for somebody to win twice. Chalky almost won. He almost won his second one this past weekend with the Onok tournament, but you know Frozen winning one, like it's so funny because Frozen has finished top 4 in a lot of tournaments, and it wasn't until like this weekend that he actually wins one, and it kind of like just solidifies thing, which in this type of game it feels kind of wrong that you have to win something to you know kind of solidify that with the community.
That's kind of a different discussion, though.
I know it is.
That's a completely different discussion.
But it is
like
about
how much we care about top 4s and top 8s and yada yada.
Sure.
I think that's just like another topic, because like repeat winners in a card game is like needing them, I think, is just kind of incorrect. Like you almost can't ask that of a card game to always give you repeat winners at the top end.
Well,
it's good if it happens, but like needing it to happen, especially with this, like the number of people involved, that seems kind of difficult to achieve, like ever.
Right, but which is why, and I've said this like many times already in the past couple of appearances that I've done on talk shows, but it's like we emphasize who wins too much.
Right.
I think we need to reward consistency, which is like getting top 8 already is. I think. Something absurd, like if there's 128 players, the chance, and assuming like you're 55% favorite against most people, you have like a 4% chance or less to get to the top 8. That's so hard, man. And if someone's able to do it multiple times, it's insane. In China, for example, there's a guy. Sorry, let me back up. In China, there's something called the Gold League, which is like the equivalent of our DreamHack or Geico events, where it's like it's completely open. There's thousands of people that sign up, and there's hundreds of people that show up to the venue, and they always have to close it because there's just too many competitors. And they play best of three, okay? They play best of
really,
three.
That's crazy variance right there.
I can't believe best of three this in 2016. That's another issue for another day.
Lula.
But there's a guy that's top eighted at Gold League like 3 or 4 times. Despite the fact that they've had 12 tournaments or something like that, and it's best of three, and he has to go through thousands of competitors. This guy is insanely good, but he never wins. He always gets like top 8 and loses, and the community doesn't care about it. They don't think twice. But this guy is insanely good, and yet this is permeated throughout the rest of the community in Hearthstone. We don't care about players who make it to the top 16. We actually see them lose right in the first round, but the process of getting there was hell. In a handbasket. So I feel like a lot of the culture has to change a little bit and how we reward it. But even more so than that, let's say a player does win a tournament.
Yeah, we don't even give enough credit to those people.
How do they advertise themselves? What they start saying is like, I'm going to start streaming because that's the way they know how to convert off their win to gain popularity. They start posting their deck list. They start writing guides. But only a few people who actually follow that end up supporting them, and then they have to go through this very long, arduous 2-year process where, like, by the middle of the second year, they can finally start seeing results. And the reason why I can say this is because look at the guys who have become popular now. Tice is starting to experience a huge surge of popularity this year, but he's been around since 2014.
He's been winning
your favorite players,
that's true.
Beating your favorite players like Colento and Amaz and Brainad back then. And people could always just say Tice, Resident Sleeper, blah, blah, blah. Like, I can't believe he played. Remember, he was playing Handlock and Druid all the time? Yeah. And we're just like, wow, who is this random unknown guy? Yeah. It takes so long, and it takes, like, nonstop beating over the head. It takes, like, an incessant amount of appearances to the point of nausea where, like, a player shows you how consistent he could be. And then finally, they start accepting him. It's the same with like with a lot of other people who are starting to become popular now. Even Dog, for example, too. There's a lot of people that are actual great Hearthstone players and superstars in the making, but we don't give them a chance because we keep clinging on to the established players that we have now. Which I'm not saying you shouldn't support them. I'm just saying that we should open up our minds more as a culture.
Well, the thing is. Gosh, I mean, it has a lot to do with the culture of Hearthstone, and it revolves around streaming. Like, just be frank about it. Everything in Hearthstone is like, it's Hearthstone in a lot of ways, at least a large part of it, is just a collection of streaming communities. I mean, we do have a core Hearthstone community too, in which you see, like, maybe super late at, you know, maybe not super late at night because there's just not a lot of people up at night, but when a lot of the top streamers aren't streaming, you get a better sense for what those numbers are like. But you know, a good portion of Hearthstone is streaming communities, and that kind of plays into whether these professional players actually win tournaments, you know, transition into something that's accepted by the community. I mean, if they're super entertaining and it transitions into a very entertaining stream too, then that's like the perfect formula, right? But some of these guys just aren't,
that inference, yeah, like just didn't give a shit about streaming. And
yeah, but he doesn't. Like, I mean, it's hard to say for him because he doesn't even stream, so you can't really measure how that is. But there are a lot of top players that have done well in tournaments, have been streaming for a long time, and they still don't have that magic moment happen for them. And yeah, guys like Dog, it's happened for. Dog has this whole other thing going on in his stream too. That's funny, you know, and entertaining too. If you haven't watched the stream, and Tice,
sure, yeah,
Tice is probably a little bit more like a better example, where it's just, you know, he's funny at times too, but he's more or less just
he's
a straight,
likeable,
good
dude.
Player. Yeah, he's likeable and he's great.
You can't dislike him. Like, he's just
So I mean, he's
dislike the guy.
Might be the only one right now. But, I guess
he's a really good example of how to do it right, in my opinion. I think a lot of people are trying to either become just a streamer and they're not necessarily giving themselves room to grow. If you just think about it, for example, what are some of the greatest meme moments or things that, let's just I really hate the word meme these days because I feel like we're just overusing it. What are some of the most fun things about our community in general? And it usually revolves around jokes about tournaments, if you think about it, like all the times when Reynad and Fireback counted to 29, or you think about Orson Gormok has four minions.
Oh my god,
that we've ever had, or like Ecop accidentally cross-bolting himself. This all exists in the context of competition. And I think a lot of people forget, or a lot of players forget, that they actually need to start competing to start introducing more variety of content. Because this is what happens in Hearthstone. And I've said this on my stream. I've written blogs about it, but I didn't publish it because I felt like it was too. I'm not trying to point swords at popular streamers, but what ends up happening is that they start segregating themselves from the community. They start isolating themselves in their bedrooms, and they start streaming the same exact type of content 5 days a week, 6 days a week, for 8 hours a day, playing very much, doing exactly what essentially is a TV show's rerun. They're just playing ladder. Oh my goodness, I got lucky. Oh my goodness, I got unlucky. Oh man, let's just cut 30 seconds of this and make this a YouTube highlight. And then they repeat and rinse and repeat for God knows how long, doing the same exact thing. And they wonder, they have the audacity to ask or to become jaded and negative. Like, what do you expect to happen? You're sitting there getting exposed nonstop, not only being able to experience yourself being unlucky, but also being traumatized by chat blasting you nonstop.
Yeah, sure, every time.
Criticizing you or stream snipers. Yeah. And, you know, there's so much exposure that no wonder, dude, no wonder they get exhausted of it. And then back to my previous thing before I was getting worked up. They have the audacity to be shitting on the game. The game that made them popular in the first place. The game that gave them everything that they have, any kind of relevance or presence. They say, this is a terrible game. I can't believe, I hate this game. This game is awful. You put yourself in that position. You cornered yourself. The streamers need to get out to events, man. Because no wonder they go insane. They lock themselves in
alone in their little bubble. It's an echo chamber of their own thoughts at that point.
Well, so wonder. Like, what okay.
All right, so let's talk about that.
Let me finish. I know I'm saying a lot, and I know I'm not giving you guys a talk, but let me just say this last point. But the reason why I don't blog this and I like talk about everything and just lay it out is because I don't think they're at fault ultimately, because events kind of suck. They're not that fun. So like, what are the streamers supposed to do? They either give up a lot of their presence and money, and also in a way help, like tournaments are very, I think the term is just cannibalistic. They just cannibalize the viewership. As a result, if you give up a weekend of streaming, you're not only losing progress, but you're also helping something else grow, and as a result kind of take your own a little bit. So I don't blame them for what they do. I just think that the current system, the ecosystem, the current tournament formats are not compelling enough. There's not enough incentive for the streamers to go out. And as a result, they're kind of stuck doing this entire thing. And that's what kind of builds up this negativity cycle, because then the streamers are saying, and they're the most influential people in the entire scene.
Absolutely.
They're the ones saying things like, Tuskar needs to be changed. Yogg is stupid. Barnes is imbalanced. Like, they're the ones saying these things, and then people who really want to play the game and they really trust their opinions also latch onto these ideas. So then they start discussing these things, and then a lot of other people start seeing these discussions, and then Blizzard starts seeing these discussions, and then it kind of feeds into this whole idea of like everything is terrible, and
Everything is a problem. Let's just I could see that. Like, the thing is, like, positivity is worth more than people maybe recognize. Like, it's one of those things about the Hearthstone environment, especially where you have to maintain it because the game will hit you in the face repeatedly. Like, just like last week, for instance, I was more than pissed at the game just because, like, I haven't been really having too much fun just with the new metagame with Karazhan and whatnot, because I thought it was a huge lost opportunity for people to just have, like, try out new stuff. And then the problem is, like, I actually bothered going to Legend, and it turned out that every single win I got with Control Warrior was like, oh, he didn't roll well on X or Y, and I won. I feel like my decisions were pretty straightforward. More or less. It's another discussion entirely.
We're going to dive into the specifics. We're going to dive into the specifics
in a second. Ends up happening is that the players, and so this is what happens. The players that do go to tournaments, then they start delegitimizing their own
achievements.
Fun of everything by not pretending like they spent 25 hours preparing the 3 days before. They spend 8 hours a day practicing.
Insane.
And then they get on stage, and then they're just like, I just played Yogg and won. And it's like, you motherfucker. Like, you
full of shit.
So hard.
Okay, it's true, man.
I do agree that I think that something needs to be done about Yogg, and I do agree. Like, everyone's going to start saying, like, you're just trying to, you're a paid Blizzard employee. It's not true. I'm not paid by them at all as an employee. I just take their money to talk about their card game. The only thing is that the players are doing such a disservice to themselves and the scene by making people not respect their wins. So then when they win the tournament finally, of course they don't care about your win, because you spent 5 events before that taking a dump on every winner and taking a dump on every, like, the people that you don't seem worthy of the victory. It's like you sow what you reap, people.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy type of thing. Yeah, and
that completely backwards. You guys know what I mean.
Yeah,
God,
yeah.
I'm just too
I like, I like so, sowing what I reap. Cool. I mean, there's like it's a never ending cycle. So I guess in that way, it kind of works.
So it's not every player though. I can speak to Frozen this past week. You know, we did a mini bonus value town on Monday. You know, thanks again to the One Nation Gamers for Ungaiko and Team Liquid for allowing us to do that. And we got a chance to interview Frozen. And one of the things that he said that was really compelling is that he thinks that a lot of the pros are. I think I don't want to quote him. I'm not going to be quoting him exactly because I don't want to quote with him. But paraphrasing is basically he thinks a lot of the pros are just relying on RNG at this point instead of getting, you know, putting some more work in and getting a lot of edges that he feels like he's getting right now when he's playing. And you know, that was like, okay, all right, that's kind of an interesting it's an interesting standpoint to hear, given that, you know, we've just been hearing about a lot of complaints of RNG. And, you know, that's somebody, again, that's been having consistent results, and even this weekend, you know, with consistency. So, you know, I think it is a big deal, like, that the players really just investing into their, you know, their livelihood, too. And, You know, one thing that you did mention before, Frode, and I wanted to talk about is just that, you know, we talk about streamers staying home, right? And a lot of that has to do with efficiency of revenue. You know, a lot of people, all of our friends have talked about it. They go on events, they lose subs, they lose, you know, they like probably could have made thousands of dollars, but they're leaving thousands of dollars by going to the, you know, like on the table by going to these events. And even if they win at times, they're still losing money, you know, and that sentiment is very, very strong right now. And so incentive to go to the tournaments is one thing, but what are those incentives? Like, is it just larger prize pools?
Is that all we're talking about? It's definitely not prize pools. Everyone thinks is the answer.
It's not the answer.
You know, I don't know. I think it's just solely based off exposure and also just like the value it has to be able to go out and experience something fun. It's a really big portion of why people are drawn towards some of the streamers in the first place, because they're intrigued by what happened in a tournament. What ends up happening too, and this is also going back to the point where like streamers kind of lock themselves in this vicious cycle. They start growing in viewership, but at a certain point they hit a wall because they're not actually introducing anything new. They are new for a while.
Sure.
The fact that they're streaming in the first place is very refreshing. Their personality is cool, but after a certain amount of period, for some people it's months, some people it's years, but they hit a wall and they can't grow anymore. And then they start blaming the game again. And it's like, no, it's not the game's fault. You've just done the same exact routine, the same exact magic show 100 times, and we're ready to see something new. So they move on to other people who are doing that. Like Tice, for example, I think he's a fantastic example. He's still competing. He's still trying to put himself out there. Mm-hmm. He sometimes goes to tournaments to try hard. Sometimes he goes and experiments, but he's still traveling and he's still streaming and trying to be very faithful, but it's exhausting. Like for him, it's really tiring and he has to start making decisions. Is this event worth my time or not? I think, you know, it's going to get to the point where like streamers need to start diversifying their content. It's like, they have to figure out a way that it's not just about dollars in that moment. If you invest in like the fact that you go to these tournaments, you're also investing in the scene. You're developing the fertile community. Soil so that more people can appreciate the tournaments. If you invest in the tournament, and I know this sounds like I'm some presidential campaign, like I'm Kennedy saying, like, ask not what
Hearthstone
can do for
Hearthstone.
So true. If the personalities are willing to lend their names and make a tournament worth fun, imagine if Sea Story didn't have any popular players in the very beginning. That tournament would never have really taken off. And then all of a sudden, if you really think about it, the past few Sea Stories that we've had didn't really have that many huge names really show up. I think Reynad is like one of the only people. I think Forsen coming to the last one was really cool. I love that Forsen came out. But a lot of people just kind of dipped, you know, Savitz and Amaz and all of them. They're not really showing up anymore. But yet, Sea Story continues to carry on. If we're willing to lend our names and invest into it, then the scene gets more rich. We're not just people stuck laddering until the end of time, trying to grind
again.
It's more of a cycle of legend. The ecosystem is more to support it. So that way, people who enjoy those tournament content can get it, and then the streamers can also get additional types of content themselves by inserting themselves into that. But again, it goes back to the point where events need to incentivize that. So I think, in general, the fact that the ecosystem is primarily Hearthstone Championship Tour and events that feed into it is abysmal. I think that is the worst way that you can support it, because that means we're all in on HCT. That means our entire bet is that the storylines and narratives are driven by HCT, and that's the most important thing. And that's not the way it should be. And in my personal opinion, I don't think that's the way Blizzard wants it to be either, even though they kind of do, because in the end, being a world champion is awesome. HCT should not be the end-all be-all. There needs to be more established and better third-party tournaments, but they're just not happening right now because everyone is being safe. That when they run these tournaments, they're doing the same exact thing. We're going to do this many people, like 100 players, and we're going to do best of 5 conquest with one ban.
And then sometimes they're like, let's bring an extra deck, and you do 2 bans.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Okay, wow.
Let's play 7 decks. And it's like, oh, well, now actually, and there's a weird correlation where like, or you know, the more decks you actually bring, the less diversity you have.
You have.
You have to bring the same deck.
It's true.
Like, well, everyone brings Shaman at that point. You can't target it.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is one of these really, really loaded things. So to summarize the fact that I've been talking way too long.
Who cares?
Everything needs to improve. And I haven't even begun to go on what Blizzard can do.
Yeah.
I haven't even started to tell you guys what Blizzard needs to start doing too. But they need to pick up their game too. everyone needs to improve across the board. So starting with the tournaments and the organizers, starting with the community and the culture that we set, to the players and personalities and what their expectations are in Blizzard, everything needs to improve, man. And it's not just one area. People think Blizzard could fix everything. It's not true.
No.
They need help from everybody, but they also need to get their shit together too. But I talked enough, so you guys.
Put on fire. I mean, it's better you stop talking at this point, Fred, than I think you're one step away from crossing
the
line.
This is
what
you don't see from him on Twitter. You know, there's only 128 characters on Twitter, and at times you do see it on stream. But this is great. I mean, I agree with pretty much everything you said there, and it's a difficult thing because it actually takes. You know, you giving up something, you know, like in terms of, like you said, the players, maybe even the event organizers too. Maybe they have to incentivize them in a way that they didn't want to, but incentivize people to come to in that way. But it does take giving a little bit of yourself just to improve this the overall ecosystem of the whole thing. And that is a hard culture to, you know, it's hard to change culture like that, especially when and all these people are trying to make a living doing it too, right? Like everybody's always looking at the immediate future and not looking at the long-term future.
The long-term.
Yeah. So that's a difference. You know, that's something that, like, you know, I was gone for a year, right? And, you know, when I left, I felt like the community was still in that state where everybody was going to all the tournaments. You know, we were, you know, I think it was during ATLC, you know, like we've had the first ATLC and everybody, you know, there were these events where we saw everybody at, you know, just in all, and it's cool seeing all the players together and the streamers together, all the top players. I mean, even the pros that are not as popular, but they're at the same events as all the big streamers too. And I feel like we saw a lot of that. And then, you know, I was gone for a year and, you know, I was still watching stuff, but, you know, I wasn't following the scene like I was just because, you know, of other things. But when I came back, I felt like the Hearthstone scene and community was a lot different than
it dissolved.
I
remember it.
No, it didn't dissolve. It just, like I said, it just kind of insulated itself. Like everybody insulated themselves into their own community and growing, you know, that, which is very important. It is very important to be able to make a good living and sustain yourself by doing that. And it's smart too from the streamers. But we've lost that sense of community in a lot of these things. And it's risky too, because, you know, I've told other people too that, you know, once it gets to that state, what happens when these people just leave Hearthstone? You know, like, God forbid that, right? I mean, these guys do still like Hearthstone, and they still, you know, get the most viewership, and they make the most money still being in Hearthstone. But
you're talking about the personality.
Yeah, what if, like, the forces leave Hearthstone, and the Crypts leave Hearthstone?
They should leave. The ecosystem, in any kind of healthy ecosystem, things die. Things are born in, but things die. Yeah. And you kind of need to. And that's just how it is, you know. So if someone wants to leave, they should leave. But and you know what? Honestly, I think they'll be back, like, because Hearthstone's one of those games where you're going to step away for it for a few years, and then when all it takes. Okay, this is what I'm saying. Mark me down. This year is 2016.
Right. Okay, is September 7th.
It is 2:20 p.m. in Pacific Daylight Time.
Okay,
in the year 2020 or later, Hearthstone will be
or amazing. Later. I like that, so that's pretty good.
Or later, because it might take some time, because I don't know Blizzard's time. Blizzard's ways are not our ways. But in the year 2020 or later, Hearthstone will be fucking sick, dude. It's going to be amazing. there's going to be the tournament systems are going to be finally shaping up. We're going to actually have player history and legacies to draw narratives off of. We're going to have a lot better formats to play. Hopefully, there's features. The social aspect of Hearthstone will be great. All the people who are just, you know, wee little fuckers are going to be weeded out, and all the legit good people will be rising to the top, and so on and so forth. But the player base will already have been battered and weary and suffered long enough that they can't really tell. Except there's going to be one weird thing that happens. Maybe Blizzard releases two great expansions in a row. It's going to be wild to think about, but it's statistically possible they totally can. They released two great expansions in a row, and I think they can. They're definitely capable of doing it. I mean, League of Explorers was great. I actually really like Wisps of the Lookout, so there you go, two in a row.
Yeah.
Then everyone just turns, like, you know what? Maybe I install Hearthstone. Then the nostalgia hits them, because 7 years ago, they installed Hearthstone for the first time and realized how fun it was, and they realize this expansion's good, plus all the new stuff comes out. And then it all hits them at one point. They're like, wow, you know what? Maybe I should get back into it. And they start sharing it, and then there's going to be a small revival of Hearthstone that might end up making that stabilization point. And yeah. I think the reason why we're so frustrated is because we see all this potential right now, but it takes Blizzard and takes them so long to be able to figure it out that well, right now all the real answer to all of our problems is just time. It really is.
At this point, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't.
I've been talking about that with some people. Like, we were at the live event in Toronto like last weekend, and I ended up discussing the Hearthstone, like the immediate problem of Hearthstone, and how it's something that can be fixed. Like, it doesn't even take that much. Like, give us two expansions and a single rotation, and if things actually got better, then people might actually just be happy at that point. But the thing is, like, right now, and you know, with the time between releases, just feels so long. That I think it's just like a culmination of a lot of stuff that leads to dissatisfaction as opposed to like this one little thing. So it's just like a snowball effect, I guess, of people just getting mad. Like there's a chance, like, what are we, September? Like, I don't know what's going to be planned for BlizzCon, right? But like if something big is announced there for Hearthstone, that could be like another big thing for Hearthstone that just ends up bringing people back in, at least happy level wise, right? Not necessarily like, you know, the game is just better. It's just people are satisfied what they hear and plans are announced and suddenly Hearthstone looks good in 2017. RNG Fiesta might not be completely, you know, fixed. Or at least a lot of the facets of it that people dislike. But there's a chance. I think it's just, like, when Blizzard finally decides what their design philosophy is, like, every single thing that they want to do with the game, they've got, like, this clear vision of what it is. And they go that route and pursue it without being afraid of shaking shit up, then I think we're going to have a great game on our hands. But
yeah,
until then,
they're learning so much, man.
Yeah,
sorry,
I know.
Well, they are learning a lot, and the thing is that I think, you know, we're partially to blame, guys, for where the state of the game is too, because of our feedback. Just from the standpoint of 6 to 12 months, 18 months ago, you know, back when Druid and our Handlock and all
rest
that stuff.
Rest in peace, Patron.
Patron Warrior too, and I mean, Patron Warrior was like the perfect example because Patron Warrior was a deck that all the pros loved because it took, you know, a lot of skill to play it at the highest of levels, but at the, you know, I guess the lower ranks.
Let's not fool ourselves.
Yeah, but I mean,
that's not where the rose tinted glasses. Patron Warrior in that iteration was totally.
It was broken.
But
it was
not necessarily
not
because
fine.
Of the patron.
Maybe not even
because of Warsong Commander, but because of Frothing Berserker.
Frothing
Berserker,
100%.
Yeah. There were changes then. But my point is that, like, you know, we've complained a lot about just like it not being fun at times, and I don't know if Blizzard's taken that feedback directly and then just like tried to, you know, basically do their best to, you know, solve that problem by coming out with these kind of wacky cards. I don't know what their, you know, again, like their 24 month plan was for all these releases, but all I'm saying is that we could be the product of some of this that we're seeing right now, just of what we did in the past. And another thing too that I want to say is that, yeah, time is a big thing. You know, that you know, Frodan, like I'm on the same boat as in the same boat as you. I think that Hearthstone will be, you know, in the state that if players do leave and they come back, they'll be engaged again. But the thing is like, I want it to happen sooner because we're in a place right now with Hearthstone where it's super popular. Like, this is the peak, you know, this is the peak of the player base, maybe even just like the total installed player base or whatnot. And I'll give you an example with StarCraft 2. StarCraft 2 right now is in the best state like that it's ever been, in my opinion, from a design standpoint, from a ladder, from WCS, like all that stuff, was refined. It took Blizzard 6 years or 5 years to get it to the point where it is. But this is happening now that we know where StarCraft 2 is really not on the radar. It used to be, you know, not like, you know, one of the top like esports it used to be. And I don't want Hearthstone to have to go to that because people aren't going back to StarCraft. You know, like, we'll play it every once in a while, but we're not going to go to it. And there's other reasons for that too. But we run the risk of that if it takes too long with Hearthstone. There's going to be competitors coming out too, you know.
You're 100% right, dude.
Yeah,
you're 100% right. It's like they can do everything right, but is it too late? You know, StarCraft is fantastic now, but no one cares enough to like really create a lot of traction. Like, yeah. StarCraft does have a very dedicated, loyal following, and the mm-hmm. people who do that, I really envy StarCraft fans to a certain degree. It's like, mm-hmm. to be able to be that dedicated and that loyal to it is very good, but it's just such a shame to where they used to be. And I say that coming from StarCraft. Not a lot of people care about the fact that Legacy of the Void is fantastic. It's such a good game, mm-hmm. but I completely yeah. agree. And that brings us back to, like, you know, just addressing currently what needs to be done. I think one thing, and I haven't actually discussed enough about what Blizzard needs to do. I think one thing that the Blizzard needs to do is acknowledge the fact that Hearthstone say that it is
communication. Yeah, let's be more transparent about things. Yeah, we've got these developer updates, and they're like the first step. It's good to hear, you know, see Ben. Ben is like just Ben is really just the face of the entire team, guys. You know, it's like he's not the only guy, obviously. So we need to just hear more. And I'll give you another parallel. Like, the Overwatch team, I felt like, has been very, very transparent, and it's just like it shows me what, you know, they could be doing, which is coming out, trying things, and if they make a mistake, revert it back. You know, I think we'd be okay. This is a
if that game has anything good, it's their PR or like the communication between the devs and the community. Like it's I mean,
they haven't done everything right.
A little bit of a blunder with the whole summer thing. Like, everything's not perfect, but it's definitely like the beginning of it.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that they started off on that foot was a huge deal. But I even remember, like, in the early days of Hearthstone, like, even the info we could glean out of Team 5 back then, like, the team was a lot smaller, so obviously they didn't have as many people and didn't anticipate what would happen with the game. But even then, like, the answers we got were on the very safe end of the, like, I guess, community management, like, spectrum. It's insanely, like, it hasn't changed, I feel like. A little bit it has, but ultimately the stuff that we receive as info is never an acknowledgement of mistakes. It's almost never that. And if it is, it's like veiled in, well, here's kind of what we think we did right about this complete fuck-up. And I don't know if that's enough for now. Like, for now, it's probably okay.
It's a start. No, it's an absolute start, because not knowing, I mean, if they don't say something, if we don't know that they feel like they made a mistake on a card, then we think that they think this card is good, right? Or they think this is exactly where they want the game to be. And that's what's concerning to a lot of people that don't like where the state of the game is.
I think even more than that, though, I mean, you guys are saying great points. Like, the fact that they should just be more transparent. First of all, Ben Brode being willing to show his face.
He takes a lot of shit.
Like, purified, dude. Is there one person in the world I don't want to be on whatever day that
was?
Or like hell dropping. It's like, to show a video. Like, he could have just made a blog post, you know, a twit longer. But he decided to show his face and record a video. That takes balls, man. If anything, we can acknowledge that Ben Brode has big cojones.
That was a great video.
That was a good video.
But what a lot of stuff has actually significantly dropped since then. You know, we don't have statistics that are very transparent. We don't have data. Remember, they used to release infographics of like how many leopard gnomes died or something like that. That was really fun. Like, when they tracked all the stuff, like the play rates of stuff. The point is that Blizzard's not really communicating and acknowledging a lot of these things with us. But even more than that, it's like I feel like they don't necessarily truly acknowledge what's also happening, and they kind of isolate it to a vocal minority. So for example, I tweeted something the other day where I said that people are dismissing certain complaints on a subreddit because they think it's isolated to that subreddit subscriber count. And that's not true, because who see that. Mm-hmm. are not only sometimes not subscribed, but then you also have people who reference that on social media, and then that gets influencers thinking about it on their Twitch and their YouTube videos, and then journalists start talking about it, and then all of a sudden your reach is not just a couple hundred thousand people out of millions, it is millions out of millions, because of the way information spreads. Just think about it. Like, I wanted to ask a Hearthstone developer. They never officially answered me, because I think it was one of those things where, like, we have to go back and check. But I said, can you go back in time and reference how long it took for one streamer's popular deck? Like imagine when Raynak created Zoo, for example, on stream. And then how long it took for that to have a significant significant appearance in the database of how many players or percentages players have started like copying that deck. Information spreads like wildfire in Hearthstone. And so because of this, and I think we can argue that it's very fast, Noxious is 100% on the money, where content's too slow. Like, it's not enough. Hearthstone is consumed at a rate where it's just not like any other card game. we have streams, we have YouTube videos, we have deck guides and articles, and now we have podcasts, we have tournaments. It's consumed so fast. It's kind of surprising that even with a car like as ridiculous as Yogg-Saron, which I remember Ecop said in chat that Blizzard's not willing to take risks. I think that's Yogg-Saron is a clear example.
That is a huge risk, right?
This is a huge risk, and they took it. And you know, cars like even Lock and Load and everything like that, they took big risks on whether or not those
lock
cars can be good or not.
Was that definitely could
potentially
a risk.
Be stupid. Yeah. But you know, they're willing to do like potentially broken stuff. The issue is that they're not willing to really like go back mm-hmm. on certain philosophies that they have. They're not willing to like push even a little bit more content in. You know, like they don't want to do more than three content cycles right now because they think that's very good. They don't want to overwhelm the casual player base. Totally get it. Very rational. But things like the balance patches, why did that come in like a week before the expansion? Because they don't want to overwhelm players with changes. But the fact is, Hearthstone's consumed at such a much more at a much higher rate than any other thing. It's like the fact is we need this game to be much more dynamic.
Dynamic.
You can't just have it
right
the way that you guys feel like it is, because the truth is the player base moves so much faster for it, and viewership directly correlates
with that.
To sales and to a game that's microtransaction heavy. Why would you not want your game to be advertised correctly? There's over like 100 million minutes being consumed on Twitch for Hearthstone alone. That's insane. Let alone YouTube videos like but crypto,
just have
that's
more
directly marketing, yeah. And they're just not capitalized on this because they have a staunch philosophy on how they want to address the game. And I totally get it. Totally understand why they make the decision. But the truth is, the times are different. Yeah. Times are different, and they have to kind of start considering adjusting their business plans or whatever model that they choose to follow after.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right. We had that discussion, I think, with Reynard at some point, talking about like the release of new cards and like the ways they could do it. But like even beyond that, like what kind of surprises me with the way Hearthstone's like the philosophy has been kind of shown since the game was released is just how weird it is, because it seems to be disconnected from what the game is truly appealing for, like what people like in the game. I mean, you not changing cards isn't the fucking reason I picked the game up in the first place, and it's never going to be that. Like, sure, there's a point where it becomes obnoxious because you change every single card in my collection every week, but you changing a card isn't going to make me quit the game. What happens is I relearn the new environment. Mm-hmm. Like, the game is a card game, and that's a genre that's basically been unexplored by a very, very large segment of gamers just because it's dry. Like, the typical way to put it is dry. Hearthstone succeeded at making a card game enjoyable to watch and play. And it's not because they decided to make cards that are never changing in nature. So, like, I just don't get why that's a tenet of their philosophy. They're just not willing to alter. And it's the biggest gripe I've had with this game since its inception. Like, the fact that we actually, like, a lot of the changes, you know, that weren't really seen, like, alpha, beta, yada, yada, but a lot of those things just should have never happened. You know, Miracle Rogue coming out of alpha is a fucking disgrace, because we had the deck figured out, and, you know, it was played on simulators, and it was told to them, reported on forums, but it was never picked up. It took how long until Leroy was changed? And, I mean, I understood it back then. Team is small. But nowadays, is there even an excuse? Like, it just kind of tilts me to think about
that. I think the
excuse is that philosophically.
Yeah, exactly. Philosophically.
I get it.
They just changed,
but it's a really releases. Like, it's nonsense. It's just not what Hearthstone is good for. Like, there's a ton of things the game, like, appeals to you, like all the little facets of it that appeal to you, but none of them is that, like, just none of them.
I would just say the one thing I would say to them is just have more confidence in the player base, like even the casual player base. Like, players and people that play games like Hearthstone adapt very quickly.
I know, champ. Oh, have you seen the reviews on the iTunes store? Sometimes I periodically check reviews on the Android Google Play Store or the iOS Store. I'm just like, oh god,
why'd you delete my collection, Blizzard?
Right.
I paid for Dr. Boom.
Go on.
I think they've heard on. I mean, you're going to get those, all right? I mean, of course you're going to get those, but that's not the majority of people, though. I mean, you're never going to have, like, you're talking about iZone, dude. I know all about iTunes reviews and stuff, man. Like, I used to, you know, have to pay a lot of close attention to all that stuff. But in the end, it's about what in the long run is going to be best for your game, right? And if you have to take a little bit of a hit, like a mass, let's just talk about like a mass wave of changes, good or bad, buffs, nerfs, whatever it is. If you change existing cards, then that's almost like a release in itself. Like, you don't always have to make new content. Like, you know, one thing that we should probably talk a little bit, at least about details of of like, you know, situation with cards right now. Why don't we do that? Why don't we do that? And we can talk. I was going to bring up like just power creep and just power levels right now. But let's talk about just issues with certain, like particular cards, right? Because people are griping about, you know, the Yogg's run. What is your thoughts on Yogg's run? Just so we can just like put it on record and know where we're working from. Frodan, because you've said multiple things about Yogg, right? Because you've said it's entertaining. Yeah. It is entertaining, right?
It is. Yogg is extremely fun card.
Fun to watch.
But it's the fact that it's as competitively viable as it is, not healthy for the tournament scene.
Right.
But, I mean, I love it watching it on streams and stuff. So it's a very good... It's kind of like... it should be in Major Domo territory, but unfortunately it's in Golden Monkey territory.
Yeah.
And it ends up becoming... Like, Golden Monkey was already a lot of variants, but it was like cool variants in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And because you don't see it all the time. But yeah, you see it all the time, but now it's gotten... So yeah. I think for tournaments, I'd like to see Yogg take a little bit of a backseat. Even though we don't see it that often in many decks, the decks that do run it are very powerful.
They're very popular.
And also, I think the Druid deck, you know what's one of the biggest tragedies that's really ironic is that that version of Druid is actually pretty hard to play and one of the hardest decks currently besides like OTK Warrior.
It's overshadowed by a lot of
Freeze Mage. Like, very hard. And then all of a sudden, Yogg. And it's like, it just compromises the entire difficulty of the deck. You know, normally you can have a star rating. It'd be like 4 out of 5 stars difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
But because of Yogg's run, it loses a star too. It's too bad.
Yeah. Noxious. I think it's pretty clear. What do you think?
I mean, I don't even have any thoughts about Yogg. Yeah. Like, I just... Because at first when we saw the card and we kind of looked at it before the actual playing of it became a factor, it was just this type of card where you're not sure how to evaluate it. It looks like it's pretty powerful, but is it going to become like a staple in many decks? And then it turns out some decks just want to play it no matter what. Even Warriors now, some of them are including it in their list because they run so many cheap spells for removal. Yogg is a card that I wish they just actually changed to become that meme Fiesta thing where, you know, instead of being one player plays all the spells, it's both players play a certain amount of spells. So it's like they're both memeing each other into like an equilibrium where no one really gained anything on average, so people don't include it. But it's still super fun for the casual player who just wants to see spells flinging from both sides of the board. Like there's ways to make the card not competitively viable and still be super fun. It's like I look at Mind Games. If Mind Games were, you know, let's say 3 mana, and we lived in a control meta game, like that's just disgusting because it's just cheap enough that sometimes you hit an 8/8 and you win, and sometimes it's like it's just got that little bit of extra not competitive because of 4. But I think Yogg could use some of that bump. Yeah.
That's
I can't imagine that Blizzard thought Yogg was good. I think they thought it was too random to be controlled.
Yeah,
because it said like it could target anything. They're like, well, you could target yourself with Fireball. And it's like, well, they thought that could be balanced in it, but after it's always difficult because their balanced team is 4 people. I think it's like Mike Donay, Reels, Max McCall, and Ixar. And then we have millions of players playing millions of games. So the numbers are very... And they have to see a year ahead in advance, too. So they were playing Yogg, you know, a year ago.
Right.
So it's, like, hard for them to foresee Yogg being as overbearing because they have to move on to testing the next phase of stuff. And then, you know, they have to be able to see things in perspective. And that's why it's important that they're willing to acknowledge things and go back and patch stuff or allow us to ban cards, which, you know, again, that's a little bit of a sore point for Chanman because Chanman tried to ban cards in a tournament and specifically got asked not to. And it wasn't because Chanman didn't like those cards, it's because those cards were bugged straight up.
They were showing
mana cost.
They were
going to get nerfed.
They had already announced that they were nerfing them.
Yeah,
I still couldn't ban
the mana
cards.
Costs like adjusted too. Like Leeroy was already 5 mana and stuff. And then it was like, if they were to play Leeroy, it'd be...
It was Leeroy and Tinkmaster at the time.
Like Tinkmaster or Spark, which was...
Yeah, but both of those were... Like, those were problematic cards at the time, and they had already announced that they were not going... I mean, I'm not going to get into it, but basically, yes, they don't like banning cards, and that that's an issue. I mean, that's definitely an issue in terms of Yogg's run. If you're not going to change the game, then, you know, the events... It doesn't have to be... I mean, it's kind of suck, because, again, this is leading back to HCT being, like... everything like storyline wise competitive, that if you don't allow the ban, then it's just like we're just stuck with a card. And your point about just them being 4 people and us being millions of people, then our feedback should be hugely taken into consideration. Value, yeah, even faster. Like, changes should be made based on the feedback of millions of people. And you can, yeah, there's a lot of crap on Reddit, but there's at least tens of thousands of legitimate, you know, posts about like why it's not good.
So, can we just appreciate that we're not right on Menagerie Warden? Can we just appreciate that the Yogdruid is so fucking busted? Like, the Malygos Yogg is so busted and has so many angles to for you to fight off against that Menagerie Warden just looks terrible in comparison. Like,
right now, but eventually.
I appreciate that that's garbage.
Right now.
One of your things that no one's talking about, that Beast Druid is not taking over the way people thought it would.
But I'm kind of taking over. I'm half happy, but at the same time, I'm like, the only reason it's not like a deck people play is because the alternatives, like, people have tried actually making like the Beast Yogg shenanigans and it works pretty well. But then you look at all the alternatives you could take and it's like, well, I might as well just play these 8/8s, which don't require any buffing and, you know, punch you in the face on turn 5.
Yeah.
So it's like different world.
So we're talking about cards. I want to ask your opinion on this because I made a video like, I don't know how many, like a few days ago or something like that. And this video got very mixed reviews, like a lot of downvotes, a lot of upvotes on it. And, you know, I talked about a few things. It's like one of these current state of Hearthstone things. But one of the things that I talked about that a lot of people, you know, disagreed with was one of the things that I think is wrong with the game right now. And a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people that think this is one of the more fun things about the game is cards like the rogue cards, like Swashbuckler and Huckster, as well as Cabalist Tome
and Babbling Book.
And Babbling Book.
Yeah.
The concept of giving players random cards, particularly cards that are just not in their deck, I feel like is leading. It's like one of these things that we all thought was fun in the beginning, but for me, I'm starting to see it as like problematic, especially in the highest level or competitive levels, because I think fundamentally with Hearthstone, or at least this type, and this is my first TCG again, guys, so like, you know, I didn't play Magic and stuff, but for me, like Hearthstone, one of the fundamental aspects of it in competing against another person was having knowledge, limited knowledge, but I have some knowledge of what they're playing. Like whenever they play a certain deck, it may take me a few turns to kind of figure out what they're playing, but if I know kind of the meta, I can kind of understand what it is and I can make reads and make plays that I think will be efficient on my side. Now, when you start adding random cards to their deck, then that's when I start feeling like, oh my gosh, this is like, I have no idea. So I almost end up playing a form of Arena all of a sudden when this is not what Constructed and Standard was meant to be, at least in my eyes. And I was thinking just generally, maybe from a design standpoint from Hearthstone. And it's another one of those things that feel a little bit RNG, too RNG. RNG from the standpoint of just like your cards, like that you hold in your hand. And want to see what you think about that. What are your thoughts on that?
I can see where you're coming from. I also disagree pretty strongly on that. I think I do agree with the sentiment that if there's too many things to play around, then you just can't play around it. Babbling Book, of course, being one of those things. But same as like Ethereal Conjurer, and we love Ethereal Conjurer Discover stuff. I mean, and if you think about it in very abstract form, Ethereal Conjurer is very similar to Cabalist Tome. Because it's discovering three cards, except you get to choose all of them just at the expense of the body. And there are things that you can play around, and to a certain degree. It's like, okay, he only has 10 mana. He can do double Fireball and Frostbolt. So there is range to play around. And the reason why this is important, I'm not saying that RNG is like amazing all the time. I'm saying that the reason why, to counterpoint you, is that if you have things extremely consistent, then once again, games will play out very similarly all the time. Part of the reason why the variance is there, and if you guys don't have never read that article that the MTG devs wrote on randomness and how it can be a useful tool to create actual skill in terms of differentiating lines of play, then you should go read it because it's a very fantastic read, and I think a lot of people can back that up too. Certain cards with randomness are actually very good for the game, and I love Ivory Knight. I love everything about it. I love the fact that
Ivory Knight, as an example, is a little different because it gives information to your opponent. If it's not played at when you have 30,
sometimes it doesn't. Yeah,
but it does have that aspect of it. So there could be, you know, you could have at least limit the range as to what it could be.
Yeah, so I mean, I completely get what you're trying to get at, but I don't think those are the real culprits. I think the culprits are like Yogg, where it's like, you know, here's like the really funny thing. In a lot of ways, Yogg is actually too complex.
Because
there's too many things to account for. You have to account for what's the chances of you clearing your own board, clearing his board, drawing a card, healing yourself, healing your opponent. Like, there's just way too many factors, so it's best to just simplify and just not worry about it. And that's when it's problematic, when it's like the range is just like way too crazy. So, for example, Spellslinger. Spellslinger was another good example of, I think, just like, or Unstable Portal. These are the things that are like too difficult to really accommodate for.
Yeah.
You know, the portals that exist today, you kind of understand the range. They summon a certain mana cost, so you can kind of get like, okay, I can either have like a 2/2 at the worst scenario, or maybe a 4/4 at the best scenario for a 2-drop. So you kind of get that idea. I completely understand what you're saying, Chaman, but I'm just trying to counterpoint you, preside the other argument.
Sure.
Yeah, and just to throw one counter argument to that with the Ethereal Corruptor, it is a card that we all loved, you know, I think just when it was out. The issue, I think the reason for that was just because we only saw it maybe once or twice in a game. Now we're starting to see Cabala. So I mean, we're seeing Mage get like 8 additional cards to their deck, you know, like, it has a lot to do with volume too, and it was more palatable.
That's what it is.
It was more palatable when you didn't see much. But dude, now we see like rogues stealing like a ton of cards. I mean, we used to only see it in Thought Steal, and you know, Corruptor came out. It's like, okay, this is like something new too. And we did have Unstable Portal, but again, it was just like once or twice. But and it was already talked about back then, at least Unstable Portal. But now we're seeing like, man, they just go full out. Man, we're gonna add 38, and we got Prince Malgazar too to your decks. And I mean, it's just this one
that card. Super funny. Yeah, I got Harrison twice.
What?
I didn't by a warrior that at Prince Malcazar.
Oh,
he got 2 Harrisons back to back. Oh man, that was crazy. And one of them was my. One of them was at like. Here's the thing.
One of your moach, probably.
He played the first one against my control mage. I was playing Steve, and so I had Atiesh, and or Tish. I don't know how to say it. So he played the first one to bait me, as if like, oh, okay, so he played Harrison because he knows that Mage doesn't really have it. And then I played Medivh, and he hit the second Harrison! I was like, what? I was like, blew my mind. It was
that's
crazy.
Awesome.
Yeah, like, how did he get the second copy of it, dude? This is crazy.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
Actually, what do you think, this whole thing?
I think it's just like the threshold of how much RNG there is. Like, there's like a world in which Discover is okay, for instance, but I think there's a world in which Discover, like, imagine every single card in your deck has Discover. Like, the mechanic is great, but fuck it. Like, just delete it from the game at that stage. And I think we're just at a point where every class just plays stuff that rolls a dice at some point. Like, Raven Idol, for all I love it, I think is just getting, like, I can't stand it anymore. Like, I absolutely cannot look at this fucking card anymore in combination with Fandral, because the range of what they could get is just, it's absurd. Like, the stuff they could combine it with when you're talking about 2 random cards, one of which is a minion. And then you stack that with Double Idol during a game and, you know, all the stuff it does. And then if it's not that, then it could be a Moonglade Portal roll, giving them Sylvanas in some of the slower decks that you run the whole Yogg shenanigan. And then you look at Shaman, it's like, okay, their Storm's going to roll, their Maelstrom Portal's going to roll, their Tuskar Totemic's going to roll, their Hero Power is going to roll, everything's going to roll, and at some point I just give up. I just play stuff, hope that they don't roll well once or twice in a row, and I can do it. But every class has those roles. Like, we're talking about all those good classes, but even Priest, for fuck's sake, Onyx Bishop and Resurrect, like, I'm gonna bitch about the fact that the minion they get is random. It's just irritating that there might be a game that's decided once because this dude gets like a really good card from Shifting Shade, and it's happened all the time. And then the second time is just because, well, Sylvana is still something good, and then she gets resurrected on the first Onyx Bishop, and then Resurrect later on brings back not a Pyro, but another Sylvana. And then it's just everything just adds up, and it becomes this game where you stop, like, you can count the odds all you want, but one bad roll will just completely take away the entire. Like, I've had series that I casted, which it was just so bad recently, where the game was super fun and super good until, like, it got to, like, 5 games, but, like, last game of the series was first dude just coins out a Tusker Totemic, rolls a Manatide, and it never dies for, like, every turn. It's just one of those things where the entire series is invalidated by one event in one game. One event in one game. It's just, like, it's too much to me at this point, but maybe I'm, like, in the minority.
It's hard to say. I mean, because of the way it ended. If that happened on game 2, I think you wouldn't really...
Sure. Well, really, I mean, disregarding the match, though, the point as a whole is just it.
No, you're completely right. Like, that shouldn't be, like, the way it ends. Just, it's terrible. It feels that way. And that just kind of summarizes the way Hearthstone presents itself. It's very in-your-face, and you get the lasting impression. It's You know, people only remember the final Yogg. They don't remember.
It's true.
There's
a lot of lists. Yeah.
Remember Reinhardt's YouTube highlight where he's like, wait to Yogg to play the last second.
Yes.
Turned out he missed one damage earlier that game.
I know.
That's true. Yeah, he could have killed his opponent. Not have to depend on it. But people would just pay attention to that last moment. And people remember that enough. But how many times do we not spot that? It's one of those interesting things where, like, one thing that's extremely surprising as a trend is that we're starting to gravitate more towards being extremely data-driven in all of our conclusions in Hearthstone, which I really like. I really love the fact that we're statistics and percentages and data-driven, and yet Hearthstone's completely anecdotal. Oh, sorry, not Hearthstone. Yogg-Saron is completely anecdotal for now because we can't calculate stuff. And I really would love if Blizzard could have a candid conversation, maybe not publicly, maybe they talk to just, you know, the influencers and stuff, just kind of like talk about the actual data behind it. Like, how many games is Yogg actually winning? What if it was something absurdly low? What if it was something absurdly high? And then it's like one of these things that we have to talk about, because that's what I was talking about, transparency and communication to a certain degree.
Makes sense, actually. And that's
something that
point.
Some developers do, and I really would like to do. Because it's fascinating that all of our discussions for a long time is like, Aggro Shaman's too good. Its win percentage is 55 across the board. But then Yogg-Saron's too good because it makes me feel bad and I'm salty. So it's one of those weird balance. Same thing with Patron Warrior, right? Patron Warrior statistics was awful win percentage wise, but the feel was so bad. It's an interesting conversation to have. I personally think that we should just take it into our own hands. Like, Blizzard doesn't have to ban Yogg for their own competition, but
yeah, allows people
outside the circuit to do your own like ban list. And I think that's probably one of the most elegant solutions, because it also puts pressure. If the tournament becomes legitimized by the community as a whole, then I mean, who's Blizzard to say no? You know, they can't just put up like an iron wall and say fuck you, your decisions are crap outside of our little circuit. But at some point, they have to acknowledge that, because the entire community wants this, and because they've been saying this since the earliest days, is we'll wait to see what the community wants. They're like too big to just take that first, meeting, I guess.
Yeah.
But at this stage, it's like, I think if people start doing those events, Blizzard will have to follow suit and in some way, or at least address the concerns that those tournaments are trying to address.
I don't think it should be them thinking about the community driving, you know, what their game is going to be. Like, they shouldn't take it like that. They should take event organizers as essentially like sample testing for them as to what's good. You know, we can try all kinds of different things, and, you know, they don't have to necessarily invest anything into it. And whatever we feel like doing, if it bombs, it bombs. If it ends up being a success, they can take that into account, and they can integrate that into, you know, HCC or HCT or whatever, you know, their main product's going to be. So I hope they're not taking it from the standpoint of that, because then you have this kind of feeling of, you know, a bit of arrogance kind of thing. You know, like, they're right in what they want. I mean, they obviously
control
the IP. They control the game. This is their game, so they can do whatever they want with the game. Sure. But, you know, we like to think as a community that they care about how we feel about the game too, right? So, hopefully they don't take it like that. I guess any other comments you guys want to make, you know, in terms of power level. I wanted to ask you guys power level. What are your feelings on the power level of the cards right now in Hearthstone? Because you know, there are definitely a lot of cards in the sets now. A lot of cards aren't even being played. And I know the topic of Inspire cards came up when I made that video. And I was saying that, you know, some of the Inspire cards actually aren't bad. It's just power level wise, it's just not even close right now, you know, because we've set these certain standards for how good cards are. And I gave an example of like one drops, right? Like, before, we had 1/3 one drops were like rare and powerful. And the classes that had them, they were just iconic to them. Now we're just like, you know, 4-statted one drops, that's happening all the time. You know, 3 drops, 3-4 is like normal body nowadays, you know? And so we're seeing power levels just increase. And that's kind of natural, but I just want to see like what your thoughts are, the levels right now. Noxious, you want to talk about it first? What do you think about it?
Sure. I mean, I think one of the big things to remember about this is that this can be changed whenever Blizzard chooses to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's kind of like an arms race that they have to pursue, right? It's like it's the typical power creep problem. To make cards exciting, you have to make them, you know, an alternative, if not a straight up upgrade over other stuff that's appealing enough that people won't just play it. Like, it's not too well statted that people play for the stats. Like, that's one of the things that, like, that's what
people were worried about with Barnes, right? It's just like you play Barnes because of stats. Turns out some decks play it that can abuse it, but not every single deck runs it. The variance on it is another component, but the stat line of it, just baseline, is like still within the range of stuff that's okay. But the problem is like the effect combined with that stat line might just frustrate people. Mm-hmm. So I don't know really if there's any like what kind of bothers me, I guess, like power creep level wise, is the something like Think From Below, right? Like you look at Think From Below and you look at stuff that had been printed in the past. Night of the Wild is a good example. Jewel of the Fang for synergy cards. You know, like all those cards that tried to push archetypes. Like Junk Bot. It's a very old example, but like they tried to push this archetype into existence by printing cards. And Think From Below is just a card it's just good. And the power level of that card synergizing with what's like the core of the class feels really odd. It's like Mysterious Challenger was stat-wise a mess. I think should have been like a 6-4. Great effect. I love it. But a 6-6, it's just Dr. Boom, not a 7-5. So I think that problem has been around for a while. And I think it just comes down to them reviewing their old content when they're about to release it. I don't know how much of that they do. I just don't.
I personally think that power levels in Hearthstone are fine right now, partially because the way Standard reset everything.
Yep.
If you guys can remember, right before Standard hit, we were playing one Fiery War Axe in a lot of Warrior decks. Yep. Which, can that blow your mind or
that
what?
Does blow, yeah, like, exactly, right?
If you need more proof, go back into Wild and try to create a Patient Warrior deck, and you start thinking, maybe I don't need Ravaging Ghouls, or maybe not both of them. Obviously, I still put one in, but maybe the second one's debatable. Not sure. Like these are all these crazy things where like the power levels, it just kind of gives you perspective of how strong everything was. And I think Standard's really important for the rotation because they don't want another expansion like TGT. And contrary to everyone's opinion, since we're supposed to talk about the fourth one, Karazhan is not the worst adventure out there. In fact, if you look at League of Explorers, there were a ton of unplayable cards. I think me and my friend were counting. It was like 21 or 22 cards at best were playable, and some of them were fringe, you know, like you don't really see them played very often, but you might see them occasionally. League of Explorers was great because the flavor and the legendaries were upbeat. That's pretty much it. And then the adventure itself was. But Blackrock Mountain has way more playable than that. And Karazhan's like kind of right in the middle, I think. It's definitely got a lot of good stuff there, and I hope that it continues to flesh out. But as the expansion's released, like, they don't want another TGD to come out, so I expect the expansion this year, at the end of this year, will be nuts. I think it's going to be really powerful. But then you kind of reset stuff, and then a lot of the really powerful stuff at the very beginning of the rotation set. So, you know, obviously Tuskar is going to rotate out and Emperor Thorsan and all these dragon stuff. Yep. Then the power level will drop again, and we're going to see it kind of go through the swing.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It's one of these things, though, where there's a lot of cards that are unplayable in Standard. Obviously, when they release cards, they do probably take Arena into content too, guys, whenever they're releasing. So a lot of these bad cards.
They do, but it's like they also like kind of don't. If you really
oh my god, seriously, right?
Like, no, it's true. Smokes. Like they do, but like I know this because Arena is just not that big of a played format. People like to complain about it, but I really want to ask how many people are actually playing Arena. They like to say this as just another reason to be upset at Blizzard, I think. But at the same time, that does that give excuse for Blizzard to not really?
Not
okay, Jamie, how many Arena runs have you done past month? Noxious, how many Arena runs have you done?
Zero. I don't play Arena, but I just I don't really care about the issue.
For some reason, everyone has a problem with it. Look, a huge portion of the player base plays Standard.
Yep. Of course.
A lot less people play Wild, and a lot of less people play Arena. Now, that said, I think it's a vicious cycle. I think the reason why it's not is because Blizzard doesn't pay enough attention to Arena. If they actually made Arena a much better draft format, in terms of just everything, if they improved Arena a lot, then more people would play it. And then that gives them more reason to pay attention to it. And the cycle goes on and on. I think because of the neglect they showed Arena, it ended up making it less of a concern for them as time moves on because people just gravitate less toward it. The Arenas, the rewards aren't nearly as good, or all this other stuff. There's probably a lot of reasons, and Crypt's probably the best expert on it. But I think part of the reason why it feels like Blizzard doesn't care as much is because that's the way that it's kind of been cultivated towards it. The cycle.
I mean, just servicing. It's one of those things too that it, like the team just isn't big enough. you know, to potentially be supporting all of it too. If, I don't know, one guy like Mike or whoever it is just like said to be the arena guy, then that's not enough, right? And, you know, we've seen issues with arena in the past, and, you know, there are definitely some players in Hearthstone that are dedicated arena people and they voice their opinions, but I don't think we've seen it to the point that it is right now. And I can't speak for myself because I don't play arena, but when I hear, you know, Crip talking about it, you know, I have to respect what Crip says about it and the, like a lot of the videos that he's talking about. And some of the things in arena, I feel like could just literally just be a rarity thing, a rarity change, which yes, doesn't involve dust and how things, you know, appear in packs and, you know, for all of us that are trying to get the cards. But it's a huge thing in arena, you know, changing something from a common card to a rare card to an epic card, sure. Right? And I feel like some them missing on that, those type of cards is a big deal, right? And a lot of people are speaking out that normally just don't say too much about it. I mean, they have their normal kind of salty complaints, but not to the point where it's just like, hey, we got to get them to change it. And that's, I think that's what we're kind of seeing with arena. I think the arena population is, I mean, obviously right now with it being in the kind of crappy state it is, it's lower, probably lower than it's ever been. But I don't know. I always felt that the arena was somewhere around the 10 to 15% of the total population play arena. At least when I talk to other folks that I feel like are experts in the arena, that it would be something like that. Maybe it's less. I don't know. Is it less in your mind, Prodan, than like 10 to 15%?
I don't know numbers.
Yeah.
It's got to be pretty low.
You know that significantly less.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be that way. When I play other card games, mm-hmm. Limited formats are the way I enjoy the game, because I'm not mm-hmm. willing to spend a lot for the full collection. So it makes me sad. Arena was the format that I played the most when Hearthstone first came out, because I really liked it, and it was new at the time. And that was what I spent most of my money on. And when I casted tournaments constructed in Fight Night, all my knowledge was based on Arena stuff. I didn't know anything about Constructed. I love Arena stuff. And it's kind of a shame that Blizzard's not really put much more into it than they already have. Like, they did a couple of adjustments, made it to 12 wins. They've adjusted some of the rewards and scaled stuff, but it's wildly inconsistent with like how they designed for it. Things like the League of Explorers Warriors rarities were great, but then now we have, you know, Firelands Portal and everything else being extremely swingy, and the perception also continues to get worse too, being a very big auto pick and stuff. So Arena's in a really bad state, and they definitely can improve it a lot. I think, you know, one thing that I would like Blizzard to do is to actually just give us an update on what they're actually doing. They say that they're working on this cool tool to improve Arena, but they're not telling us what they're doing, so they make us think that they're just saying it, so that way we stop whining about it. And that's a really unfortunate consequence of just being, even talking about it on the internet, is that once you say even the inkling of it and you don't really share much else, and then say that tool actually sucks and it doesn't actually go through.
Oh my God.
And then there's just like, you know, their obvious inclination would just be like, well, we're just not going to do it. Then should we say anything to the public? Probably not. But then they kind of let us know this small thing, and then they didn't do anything ever about it again. So I personally would love someone on the Arena team. Benbro would be like, here's Arena specialist XYZ. And that person in XYZ is like, hi, you know, we're working on this tool. We're thinking about having it, you know, adjust these pick rates or whatever. Like, whatever they're talking about, because he hinted towards it. That would go such a long way to just kind of show people that they're really trying to figure out a good solution, not just be like, well, we're just going to make Mage get half the chance you can get picked in arenas. Like, that's not an elegant
solution. It's so inelegant.
You know?
It's so inelegant. Yeah. It's like Purify being deleted. I am actually, I still don't get, I get why they did it, but I still can't think that that's the right way to ever fix that problem. So my understanding from that, and we talked about it last time, is I think they're simply revamping so much of it that deletion of Purify and Arena is not going to matter in the long run. Like, something will be changed about the way picks happen or classes happen, that Purify, like that change being inelegant, just won't matter some months down the line. That's kind of how
To be frank, I was shocked that they actually did that.
Yeah.
So in some ways, it's good that they reacted to it. At the same time, it's like, wow, like if you're going to do that with Arena, like why aren't you doing, you know, some of those type of changes with, you know, some of the other things we're asking? But obviously that was, I don't know, they felt very strongly about that. There's no way that they would do that unless they just you know, and made a video saying they made a mistake. I mean, that had to be something extremely major.
I mean, that already shows something that's cool, but like it's not enough. I really hope that something gets introduced soon. I think the last feature that was introduced, like a real big feature, when I'm talking about feature, I'm not talking about like, oh, you know, the cards now show you properly where that card came from. You know, it's not necessarily that
feature,
or like a special animation. I'm talking about like Tavern Brawl type stuff. I'm talking about like maybe there's a button that shows you where that takes you to a website with Fireside Gatherings, or a button that, you know, like maybe a tournament mode or actual spectator mode features like Telestration, for example, for real coaching. Like that kind of stuff I would really love to see. Because this year, I don't think we've really gotten much. It's kind of hard to say because Blizzard considers things like being able to be played on iPad as a feature. And it's like, yeah, that is just true. You know, building a UI completely for mobile is different. But I want to see more. Like, and fragmentation, the player base is always tricky because you don't want to introduce too many more game modes. But Tavern Brawl is supposed to be new content every week, but it's not satisfying. We technically get patches in kind of every week. If you think about Tavern Brawl, like all the different stuff that comes in, but it's not enough, man. And I think I'd love to see Sealed or some kind of better limited format or something like that gets interesting enough. You know, maybe, you know, maybe sandbox mode that allows it to do other kind of stuff. There's so many things that Hearthstone can do, but they're a little bit behind on the timeline. That's kind of what's really disappointing.
Maybe we just need a bigger design team. Just more bodies.
No, man, it would just get bogged down. Like, I don't know how much you can
answer, but
as far as like making all that fit together, it's like you can have a bunch of good designs and then you try to implement them, it's like, well, there's this bottleneck, we can't fit everything in. So eventually you just get bottlenecked.
All right, well, why don't we take some questions from you guys, we've been kind of spending over an hour on this, so let's take some questions from you guys, the audience that are viewers that are watching. You can tweet your questions to @ValueTownGG or at me, @ChamanB, and I'll start reading them off. Okay, so first question I have, I kind of start things off while we're kind of waiting. There is one question from Pickles that says, should Classic Basic be evergreen for Standard? Doesn't it lead to a stale nature of a card game?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But, and this is... People always accuse me for being a Blizzard show, but I'm just explaining to you what their logic is. There's just logic to it.
Okay.
There is one.
This is the logic of why they do it. The reason why is because every single game has a major exit where something dramatic happens in the game. Let's say an expansion comes out. And you just don't like it. That gives you an opportunity to just leave the game. You haven't been enjoying Hearthstone that much. Or maybe it's just, you know, say you haven't been enjoying some MMO or RPG very much, and then something comes out, and you're like, okay, that's it. That's the final straw. I'm just going to leave here. It's like a good time for me to leave anyways. A lot of times it's when people get banned. They're like, okay, fine. I'm just about to leave anyways. I don't like this game, even though I'm a freaking cheater, you know? All these kinds of people have...
I climbed to the top of the ladder for the good of everyone.
I climbed to the top of the ladder win trading, and now, now I wanted to leave anyway. So thank you. Thank you for giving me a reason to leave. People have exit points, man. And Standard would be a huge one. Remember when Korea threatened to all leave, like Hearthstone, because they didn't want to play? Blizzard just wanted to reduce the amount of exit points as possible. And one of them would be changing everything that you've ever known about the game, like by not having, you know, Classic in the Standard rotation. That being said, I disagree with keeping it in forever. I think they just didn't want to say they would change it because they didn't want to be committed to it. My personal theory, I have no confirmation, I've never talked to them about this, or never heard them say it, that eventually it won't. Eventually they will have a core set. I think it's stupid to think that we'll be playing Wild Growth and Fiery War Axe and all these other things for the rest of time. That's boring as hell. They know. You have Flame Imp on turn one, Zoo and Freeze Mage forever. Like, it needs to change. But for now, I think at that time, given what Standard was, that's why they did it the way it is. So that's my theory.
Okay. Another question. What one card would you like to be added to the, you know, if they were to add a card from any of these expansions and not just retire all of them from each of the releases, what one card would you like to see added to the Basic or Classic set?
You mean come back from all the, for the expansion that left?
Yeah, so like all the
Shadow Bomber.
Shadow Bomber. Okay.
I'm going with Shadow Bomber, dude. I want an interesting priest archetype that isn't heal my shit until I die.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
I just want another type of priest. But tangential.
How about you? I'd probably go with Zombie Chum. Oh, sorry.
Or even upcoming. Like, let's just say the existing ones that we see right now. Like, at the end of the year or the beginning of next year, we're going to retire all these pretty key expansions that we see in the meta right now. What one card would you keep?
Probably... hard. I want to say something like Finley because I think he's really cool.
All the adventurers are immediately
they'll probably think of Finley as an aggro card, but I mean, Finley does open up a lot of possibilities for stuff. Primarily, like, say you're a hunter that doesn't want to just go face all the time. You know, you want to have like anything else to play a little bit more defensive and play controller style. Assuming that's possible.
Eventually.
You know, I think Finley's a really cool card. Very well balanced for one mana legendary. Yeah. Like, super hard to do legendaries at low cost that aren't just like completely busted or just useless.
Yeah.
Very well done.
Yeah.
With a bit of randomness. Good stuff.
That's true. That's definitely, it is a little bit of randomness, but it's that one's not too bad. Given that the point of the card is to switch.
It's bad when you stack it with everything else, but on its own, it's perfectly fun, honestly. I love Finley.
Yeah.
I mean, I think all the adventurers that
I think Reno
was introduced were just good.
Reno's the one for me. I'd like to see Reno added, just because it opens up.
Reno's pretty good, too.
It gives them more design space, too, to like from a heal, like giving everybody a potential
even
heal.
Even Elise.
Yeah.
I'll take Elise as well.
That's true. Let's see. We got... Okay, Blue Spark has a question for you, Frodan. Who's your favorite caster to watch and to cast? And then another question, to cast with.
To watch? I mean, look at is Lothar, obviously.
Look at is Lothar.
I watch Lothar every night.
Okay, all right.
Even the rebroadcast.
He is a handsome caster.
Hey, sorry, I'm wrapping up here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
to cast with these days, it's kind of hard to say. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess combination of like Reynad or TJ. Like TJ and I get along really well. Me and Reynad really well.
All right. How about one question? Then we gotta go. Since you gotta go. Let's see. Matthew Woodgay. Do you feel Sylvanas is going to make any other potential six drops in the future OP for them to see play?
That was a fear people had a while back.
Yeah.
If anything, I think cards like Sylvanas just make cards like Moonglade Portal, you know, difficult to actually make. But, it's one of those really fringe situations. I don't think, like, Sylvanas as a six drop was cut out of a lot of decks for a while. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like it used to be good in Druid, and then suddenly everybody's like, fuck this card, it's too slow. Or it doesn't do what I need it to do in this deck. She's always going to have like some use in a lot of, we're talking about a metagame where N'Zoth is played. Like, when do you really see Sylvanas outside of those N'Zoth decks or, you know, warrior killing it themselves? It's like, it's okay, but it's not this broken thing.
Yeah. I don't see it being that limiting either. Yeah. Rodan, what do you think? Power wise? It's pretty different.
Nah, I think Sylvanas is like an example of also like extremely controllable randomness. You can play around her very well. A lot of people, and also Sylvanas is a card. It's a skill card. Like, people mess up playing against Sylvanas all the time.
Cthulhu on an empty board against Control Warrior. You're like, thanks.
Yeah, or vice versa, they like don't trade into her properly, or they choose to ignore her, but then forget about what opponents can do to it. Or, for example, people save Sylvanas to steal C'Thun's because they know that they want to revive their C'Thun's. It's like there's a lot of like interesting use of it, and you know, because it's counted as a polymorph slash steal, so you don't kill C'Thun.
Yeah. I love
Sylvanas is a great card. I don't really think that she pushes. I mean, her power level is pretty strong, but I like her being that.
Important question. So when Sylvanas steals Yogg in the middle of casting, should you be getting credit for all those?
Yes, fuck Yogg.
Don't you?
You do.
Like, oh yeah, you do. What am I talking about?
If Sylvanas
it switches, right? It switches at that
Yogg,
point.
Yeah. You draw cards.
That's right. It's only happened to me once, so that's I totally forgot. So it works that way. Okay.
That's how it should be.
Yeah,
it should be true sense. Randomness. Like any person can cast Flamestrike. So your opponent casts Flamestrike. It's like, oh crap! Like, I cast Flamestrike on myself.
I mean, if they cast Twisting Nether, then I guess it doesn't matter either way.
Yeah. But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's only happened to me once. How many times has it happened to you? You guys don't play Sylvanas when Yogg's potential, right?
I mean,
never. I knew the interaction and never played into it.
Yeah.
So.
All right, well, why don't we wrap up? Fantastic show, man. It's awesome having you on, Dan. It seems to always be a good show. You should have you on more, but you're so freaking busy, so that's why I ask as much.
I have a lot to say. I'm sorry today that I took up so much
time. No, it's great. It's exactly
no worries, dude. It's actually just nice to have a guest who talks. You know, it's like sometimes we'll run into these shows where not enough has said. Well,
they're still awesome
every
too.
Every single show we have silence
about
on.
The wing. Pretty good.
Yeah,
the wing. I like it.
How was the wing? Oh, the wing was pretty good. How'd you like the boss?
I like this card.
Yeah. Pause and then all right, let's start new topic.
All right, so
let's
wrap up. This deck's not that good. Not that good. Yeah.
Those great interviews. Those are the best.
What have you been playing?
Those are the best.
Awesome. Hey, thank you for that. Thank you for the analysis.
All right, we're gonna go back to the analyst test now. It's just like immediately, right? But okay, yeah. Let's just do some shout outs. Frodan, any shout outs you wanna do or where can people find you?
A big shout out to like all the people who are actually like really vocal and active. I completely recognize that people complain because they care about it. So even though it does annoy me a lot that some people make some false assumptions about stuff or like they just have very bad arguments of stuff, the point is that they care, you know, and they care enough to say stuff. So a big shout out to like the community for always being super active. I hope you guys like don't end up just quitting out of frustration. You know, things will probably get a little bit worse, but they'll get better over time. You know, and we can suffer together. When you suffer by yourself, it's a miserable experience. But when you suffer with others, it's a bonding experience. So let's bond. And then, of course, shout out to Chan. Thanks so much for hosting. And then big shout out to the Temple Storm guys, too. They helped me a lot with a bunch of stuff, too. And we're going to be doing some cool stuff in 2017 that's not Blizzard related.
So we heard. Yes. So we heard.
Yeah. Keep your eyes and ears tuned.
Cool stuff, guys. Cool stuff. Coming. Noxious, how about you? Shout outs, and where can people find you?
No, just shout out to you just for putting the show together without any help. I mean, I wasn't even around when you came up with this whole topic, so that was pretty cool. And as far as the rest of shout outs, probably just a big shout out to Complexity. Like right now, I feel like the team is doing pretty well. A lot of people in the team are burnt out, but I'm hoping it's going to get better. I think a lot of us are sticking around for the long haul despite some of the issues that we're running into right now. So, yeah. Shout out to the devs, if you're listening. Yeah. Please.
Please. Help. Please. Please.
We're dying
they
here.
They are listening.
Yeah, they are definitely.
For sure they are. Yeah, that's
the thing. Send them an email sometimes, Noctis.
Every day.
Every day.
Ask, why doesn't anyone talk to us? God, they always just post folder. It on Twitter immediately.
Really?
Like, send them an email spam. Sometimes.
Okay. I always think it's going to get lost in a sea of the salt.
Then send it to me and I'll send it.
Okay.
It's in the form of a book. It's in the form of a book.
Blizzard Shield confirmed.
There you go.
It's sent it to the liaison. Okay, guys. Not Shill. Liaison.
Liaison is the word.
All right. Well, I want to thank you guys. I want to thank Backspace, too, for coming on earlier and, just talking with her, doing an interview pertaining to the Archon announcement. And Frodan, of course. And Frodan's last minute. Like, literally, Frodan's like, hey, you need me on Value Town today out of the blue, and we can talk about the current state of Hearthstone. I'm like, all right, let's do it. So thanks for doing that, man, last minute. That's the cool part about, just organizing these shows sometimes. It's like you never know what's going to happen until, like, we literally go live. And so that's really, really cool. And then Noxious, of course, always doing these things with me, man. It's a lot better, you were just saying alone. It's a lot better doing these shows not alone anymore.
Suffering.
So exactly. So I appreciate everything you do for Value Town, too. Big thanks to Temple Storm and their sponsors. You can see the sponsors right there, G2A, Twitch, and Curse for sponsoring the show. And everybody else that tweeted questions, I know we didn't get a chance to read out your questions, but, we kind of got to go. So you can check out the VODs on youtube.com/ChamMV after the show. And if you're on iTunes, thanks for all the five-star reviews. We actually had a few five-star reviews that I'm going to have to give a shout-out to next week because I don't have them in front of me. And then a few shout-outs just the Patreons that support the show, too. Devin Westfall, Cameron McMillan, Nicholas Larivier, Eric Lynn, Lucas Capdeville, Andrew Parent, just to name a few. That's going to be it for Value Town this week, guys. So for Frodan, Noxious, Backspace, and myself, ChamMV, we'll see you next week. Later.